Blog Talk Radio.
Even in the ring.
Radio.
Go ahead, who's this?
Yo, it's David Chang.
Is it me, man? Is Marquez just a goddamn beast?
Every time Marquez moves up in weight, moves to a different division, he's fighting the toughest competition he can find there. You know, he's not just finding a name that's stylistically good for him. He's fighting the hardest fight he could fight and then winning.
See, if anything's killing boxing, it's boxing. Not UFC.
You know, I won't bash MMA and I won't say, you know, it's killing boxing or boxing is better. You know, everybody has their own opinion.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Shane Mosley versus Margarito sold out the Staples Center, and that was the largest attendance for any event. Everything, every concert, anything. That was the most. And that was just recently. So that's really where boxing is headed, along with the Ricky Hatton, Manny Pacquiao. Selling out.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Okay, but everybody right now, if you're calling in, I got a couple more calls calling in. I'm not going to pass you through at the moment, but there is a chat room, and if you look on, there's a chat room. You can start chopping it up or ask your questions, and I will pass you in through as soon as we can.
Good evening, everybody. This is David Chen, and welcome to another edition of the Leave It in the Ring radio show. 97 Rough, Dave Duenes, is on the road once again, and hopefully he'll get a chance to call in. But I got our other hosts on the line right now, Chris from Sacramento, Strikehearts from Pennsylvania, and Blood from Florida. How you guys doing?
Doing well.
I'm living.
I think we also got our PR, Jesse Weekend from New York. Jesse, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. David Selesco got knocked out yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Second round. Wow, it was embarrassing for him.
Well, you got to tell us about it later, man. Real quick, guys, you know, we got to do some real quick plugs. We always want to give shout-out to our partner site, standandfight.com, our partner, Arturo over there, always doing good works for us, helping us with our website, helping us get our presses, things like that. So, guys, let's start out with some news because we got a packed show today. We want to keep it rolling. Some of the guys calling in, you guys want to go check out the chat room right now. It's up and ready to go. You can go and chop it up with some of our regulars. And also, if you want to drop a question or two, you can always leave it on there if you don't make it on the show. Because, like I said, we got a packed show today. We're trying to get both Glenn Johnson and Chad Dawson on the show to talk about their rematch, hopefully at the same time. But from what I've been told, that we're having a hard time reaching Chad Dawson's people. So hopefully he'll still come through. But Glenn Johnson should be on within the hour. So let's get some news and notes out of the way first. I mean, everybody knows by now the big news is honestly the fact that Kelly Pavlik is pulling out of his December 5th fight with Paul Williams. Paul Williams still wants to fight on the 5th, and they're looking at possible opponents. And this is really disappointing because this was going to be a big middleweight fight. It's a division we don't see a lot of activity out of, and we wanted to see how Paul Williams honestly stacks up to the best middleweight right now. But honestly, Pavlik is a reigning champion, but he only fought once this year against a pretty fringe contender, and he's really staying out of the ring due to contractual issues, and now his hand troubles, the doctor won't clear him. So how long do we have to wait before it's too long, Strikehart?
It's already been too long. I mean, he's really not – I mean, he's defended the title against Gary Lockett and Marco Antonio Rubio. And if you're saying what, I don't blame you. So it's just funny to me. I could have called this ahead of time, and as a matter of fact, I do believe I've called it on this radio show several times that the fight probably would never happen. And here we are. It's starting to feel like to me that Bernard Hopkins left a little curse on the middleweight crown after he lost his split decision to Jermaine Taylor. It seems like the last thing you want to be right now is a middleweight champion of the world, because it doesn't really turn out too well for you if you are, that's for sure.
Well, that could be, but, you know, I wanted to see it because, honestly, I thought Kelly Pavlik was going to give Paul Williams a good fight, but that's another discussion. You know, we'll talk about that when the fight, if the fight happens again. But now Paul Williams is looking at replacement opponents, and one of the guys they're really pushing for is the WBC 154-pound title holder Sergio Martinez. Now, Chris, what do you think about a possible fight between Martinez and Paul Williams?
Depends on the weight. If you go at 160, I think Williams, his fight, you know, easily, because I don't think Martinez is, I don't know, he just doesn't seem like a big junior middleweight. But I don't know, if it happens to, like, at a catch weight or something, Martinez might be able to hold his own. I mean, we saw how Quintana was able to handle Williams in their first fight.
I mean, I don't think the fight will be at a catch weight. I mean, Sergio Martinez is a title holder. You know, there's no reason why he should just go and have a catch weight. It's not like he needs to do this for money, right? He'll do this as a title defense, as a way to get a legit win over a big name like Paul Williams. And Paul Williams, you know, he's still looking for that. You know, I mean, I don't really know. I mean, it's got to make business sense, right? So right now, who's got the bigger name, Paul Williams or Martinez? Or rather, who can claim to have the upper hand in a potential match? I don't really know, but you know, the fight is interesting, and Paul Williams is being a good sport about it. He's saying, I will definitely fight on December 5th, so that night of fights is definitely protected. But another fight that's kind of creeping in on the radar is Amir Khan will be defending his belt that he received earlier this year against Andreas Kotelnik. He'll be defending against New York's Dmitry Salida. I want to hear from Blood on this one.
I'm going to go with my boy Amir Khan. I think, you know, I mean, he needs to just go in there with that killer instinct, man, and I think he'll wrap it up. I wanted to say something real quick on the Paul Williams issue.
Sure.
Because you kind of skipped over me there, so that's cool. But
man, you can speak up at any time. You know that, man.
Anyway, let me finish my Newport. Anyways, I think that that Paul Williams is the bigger name, and the fight should be at 160. If he does end up fighting Martinez, then he should move up. Why should Paul Williams take a step back? I think he's a little bit too big now. He's a middleweight. It's sad that this fight ain't happening at middleweight. I think that Pavlik is just making excuse after excuse, and you know, we're taking another step back now. And you know, I'm just getting tired of this whole thing with Pavlik. He needs to make
right.
up his mind if he wants to still be a fighter or if he wants to commentate or whatever. But it's time for him to step up.
The thing I have with that is the fact that they're thinking about Martinez. I mean, Martinez honestly isn't really known for anything other than the fact that he has a title at 154. So I'm thinking the fact that Paul Williams' people are thinking about, you know, getting Sergio Martinez in a fight is that they want to go for the 154-pound belt. Because otherwise, if they want a middleweight fight, I think there are other people they can fight instead. You know what I mean?
The belts don't mean nothing anymore. Paul Williams is the man right now. And if Martinez wants some of him, then you know, it doesn't do anything to benefit Paul Williams to step back and fight for 154, man. You know, at this time, I would like to see him fight Pavlik. If he doesn't fight Pavlik, he should try to fight another fight at 160. But hopefully, you know, this fight will come through. I know a lot of us, we're just getting tired of waiting for Pavlik to make up his mind.
Let me jump in there real quick, Blood. I believe when Paul Williams last fight, when he beat Vernon Phillips, it was for a title at 154, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's the interim,
exactly. So
I believe, WBO champ, so it could be a unification.
If he fights Martinez, yeah, he would hold two belts in that division. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying, Blood, but there would be some significance where he would hold two of the major three titles at that weight class.
It don't mean nothing. Them titles don't mean nothing anymore. I mean, even other fighters are saying it now. It don't mean anything. Right now, we just want to see the fight with him and Pavlik. When Pavlik decides and makes up his mind that he wants to be a fighter, then we'll be glad to see
right.
the fight. But until then, you know, I guess we're just sitting here waiting once again.
To me, I mean, this just reminds me of Arthur Abraham and Kelly Pavlik, and now this is the new Arthur Abraham that he won't fight. I just want to see Kelly Pavlik defend the title against somebody who deserves a chance to fight for it. That's really what I want. That's what I want from Kelly Pavlik.
I mean, after so much inactivity, are you still even the champion at this point? That's the question. I don't even think he's still the middleweight champion. I mean, he's been inactive for too long. He doesn't seem to have the right mindset after Bernard Hopkins put that whooping on him. He don't seem to have the right mindset. So I think he's just a little bit afraid right now. I mean, I'm not usually one to call the fighters afraid, but Pavlik just been coming up with excuse after excuse, and I'm just really tired of it at this point. I wanted to see Paul Williams get his feet wet, and, you know, boxing is taking a step back, especially in the middleweight division. I like what Strikeheart was saying. I agree 100%.
Right. I mean, even if he fought Felix Sturm or, what is it, Sylvester, whatever that guy's tongue twister name, fight somebody would make it a significant fight. Unify the titles or fight somebody who's got an actual chance to beat you. No more Marco Antonio Rubios. If you're going to fight somebody like that next time, man, just throw in the towel. Give it up.
Well, they had to kind of reset the counter on that. You know, it's like Blood said, is he still the champion anymore? I guess when they fought Rubio, they kind of reset the counter on how long he can hang on to the ring belt, right? So
yeah, he gets it for a year after that.
Exactly. So, I mean, I guess technically he can wait. I mean, the doctor is the one stopping him from fighting, so I'm not really sure. So to be fair, maybe he's scared of fighting Paul Williams. Maybe the Hopkins fight is still in his head, or maybe it's just a hand problem. I mean, I don't want to force a guy to fight when he's not ready. But, this one is good. I think, we're going to let that marinate a little bit and, see what comes out of this. Paul Williams needs to pick an opponent, and then we'll pick it up when he does that. But I want to get back real quick, to the Conor Salida fight, because the thing that caught my eye is recently they've been pushing for this Muslim versus Jewish thing. You know what I mean? And I don't know. It's, maybe it puts butts in seats, but, you don't really need to do that. I don't think of either guy as, their religion. You see what I mean? They don't really push the Muslim angle that much with Conor. They don't really push the Jewish angle that much with Salida, at least not to me. I mean, what do you guys think about this?
When it gets down to it, that's what it's going to be, though. I mean, so yeah. Why try to sugarcoat it? That's exactly what it's going to be. When those guys sit down in their living room in front of the TV, people are looking at issues like that. So let's not try to overlook that. It's sad. Yeah, we don't want to, make that the thing that sells the fight, but it's something that people look at. People look at their religion. They tend to go with the fighters who have some of the same belief systems as them or who are the same race or culture as them, and that's just how it is.
Yeah, and Salada hasn't really had a lot of exposure to this point, but on the Ring Life little segments that HBO did for him, they seem to play up his faith a lot in that. It seems like that pretty much dominates his whole life, really. I when I spoke with Andre Rogier a couple weeks ago, I had asked him about that because I know he's in the same area where Salada would be, obviously. And the first thing he made was a joke. He said, Dmitry Salada fights out of the Orthodox style, and he waited for me to laugh. So it does seem like the religion plays a big part in Salada's life. Now, Khan is more mainstream than that. I don't really think his faith dominates his life like that. But it does play a big part with Salada, at least it would appear so.
Now, guys, real quick, I got a bit of news. I'm being told by our PR red that it's possible for us to get Paul Williams' manager on the line with us to answer some questions. Would you guys like to have him on?
Hell yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, bring him on.
All right, Red, you heard it. Make it happen. All right. While Red is doing that, the Manny Pacquiao-Miguel Cotto fight is creeping on us, and we kind of forgot about that in a while. We let that sit on the back burner, but this weekend is going to be the 24/7, the first episode. We've been seeing a little bit of news from the Philippines about Manny Pacquiao doing very well in sparring. We've been seeing footage of Cotto, his new tattoos, his training as well. I mean, what do you guys think about this fight? Aside from the slightly disappointing undercard that Bob Arum has underpromised and so on and so forth. what do you guys think? What's your impression right now, as opposed to when they first announced this fight back when Cotto had just almost lost to Khaledi and Manny Pacquiao had destroyed Ricky Hatton. Blow, what do you think?
I think they better both be in the right mindset, because I think they tried to underplay Manny Pacquiao, what he was thinking about the fight. I think that he was being focused on this fight the whole time. They tried to say he wasn't focused and this and that, trying to make another excuse for their warrior. I mean, hey, I hate to say it, man, I'm not usually one to try to, really pick a fighter in this one, but, hey, man, I'm going for Miguel Cotto all the way. I hope he wins this fight. I think both fighters are motivated. They're both training hard. It's going to be a good fight, but I believe that Manny Pacquiao, he's never fought nobody as big as Miguel Cotto. And the 2 or 3 pounds, personally, I think Cotto should just come in there overweight and pay the fine if he has to.
Hold this thought, guys, because I want to come back to Manny and Cotto. But we got Red on the line right now. Red, how you doing? Red, how you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. You got Mr. George Peterson on with us?
Yeah, we got Mr. Peterson. Oh, yeah. Mr. Peterson, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mr. Peterson, how you doing, man?
Fine. You doing all right?
All right. So what can you tell us about what happened with this Pavlik thing? I mean, did they just call you people and say, hey, guys, sorry, we can't do it?
Well, you know, it was first mentioned in their local newspaper, and then one of the boxing scene writers got a hold of it, and of course notified us that it wasn't going to take place. But you know, it wasn't no surprise for us. We had already been preparing for that. We knew after the first time, it was on for about 2 weeks, and he jumped off of us onto Bernard Hopkins, and then we scheduled for October the 3rd, and then he was trying to get Winky Wright while he was on with us for the second time, a fight with Winky Wright. And after that, you know, it was rescheduled December 5th. We knew all the time that he was trying to get out of it. So it was no surprise. We had been preparing for it. So we weren't bent out of shape as a result of that happening, no.
Why would he want to take Winky Wright, a fighter that Paul Williams already beat, though? I don't understand
there. But that's the phenomenon. That's the fad for the day. These guys want to fight who they know they can beat. Nobody wants a challenging situation. I mean, it's getting to the point. You know, old school, you know, when you talk about Roberto Duran and when you talk about Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns, that was old school. Marvin Hagler, those guys will fight each other, you know. But today, no, it's about who you think you can beat. You know, if you get these youngsters today, it's about who you think you can beat. That's who they want to fight. So a challenge? No, they run away from a challenge.
Mr. Peterson, I
got
to figure this out.
You mean take a challenge?
You mean you guys are the ones who are going to be on contract as his opponent, but you guys had to read it from the internet to find out that he wasn't going to go through with it?
Sad. Do I need to say that again?
That's just terrible business. Have you been talking to Paul? What's he been saying about all this?
Well, of course, you know, Paul was conditioning for it. We had a press conference in New York just 3.5 weeks ago. And I mentioned to them then, I mentioned to the Pavlik and his camp, you know, take this guy away from here. Take this guy and put him in a real camp because we don't want any excuses. So I figured then, I mean, like I had before, that this was not going to happen. And I had also, you know, alerted Paul that, hey, man, this fight is not going to happen. So he was very well conditioned for it.
So we were talking.
So what's
about
Paul looking for now? Who's he looking to fight now? Is he gunning for anybody?
We're going to fight December the 5th. The fight is still, you know, fight is still on. Like I said, all the time we were working for, you know, getting an opponent while this was supposed to have been going on, but we knew that this was going to happen. So we had been working on getting an opponent. So we got a couple guys in mind that got some strong negotiations going on. I care not to reveal the name right at this moment. But it's going to take place.
Can you reveal whether or not you're going to be campaigning at 160?
All I can say is that it's going to happen December the 5th.
You can't give me a weight class? No weight class?
Well, you know, very few people going to reach up to us or reach down to us in this weight class. But you know, we to a point where it's going to be a challenging fight for us. You know, we're not seeking to fight any losers or any cab drivers or anything. You know, we want to fight a really challenging fight. I mean, that's what we've always done. We never ran away from a fight. So we definitely want to fight someone that's going to have some clout to their name.
Well, I'll just put it this way, Mr. Peterson, because you know Paul is right now waiting to and ready to fight a middleweight. But let's say the right fight, a hypothetical fight, we won't mention any names. But say the right fight came up at 154. Is that a division that Paul still has interest in? Is that a weight that he can still
absolutely
make?
154 or 147, it doesn't matter. If the right fight came up at 147, we would make the necessary adjustments and we would fight at 47.
Well, we know ain't nobody at 147 got set to fight Paul Williams.
can you give us a secret on exactly how Paul is able to just change up like that, man? How does a guy like him make 147? I mean, why doesn't everybody just do it? You know, well, all the guys who are over 6 foot tall.
Well, you know, our training camp is a little different than what's normal. You know, Paula fight on a Saturday night, and on Wednesday he's back in the gym. Normally what happens in a situation like that, a young man will fight like on a Saturday night, it may be until he get a fight again, which may be 3 months later, before he comes back in the gym and start training. Or he may take off a month. Well, at that rate, he has enough time to let that weight grab a hold of him, and it's hard to get off. But see, once we get that weight, we keep it off. We just keep it off. That's all there is to it.
So this whole time, all the sports writers, all the fight fans have been talking about the possibility of this fight, you know, picking who's going to win, Paul or Kelly Pavlik. But this whole time, I guess Kelly never even signed the contract. And from the way you're talking, it sounds like he never even had the interest of, you know,
well,
going through
with this. Well, you know, he's saying now that the fight still could take place, but it could take place January 23rd. We're not going to wait again. We ain't keep fighting around waiting on this guy to fight us. I mean, you know, it's apparent that it's not going to happen. So we're just going to get over it and try to find us another opponent, which we will have opponent December the 5th.
Hey, be honest. You think Kelly got cold feet right now?
No, I don't think he's cold. I think he had absolutely no heart at all.
you just made it worse on him.
You know, his feet was all right when he jumped off the bandwagon on the Bernard Hopkins. It was all right then, but he jumped out of there. See, this is, you know, it's very, very, I mean, it's apparent that this guy just doesn't want to fight. And I don't much blame him. Now, I'm going to put myself in that position and his position, and I don't blame him. Who would want to fight Paul Williams at 160 and 147? If I had a fighter, I wouldn't want to put him in there with Paul Williams. I'm being honest. I would try to get whoever I could and get around with this, get from this guy. Now, you see, the loss that Pavlik took from Bernard Hopkins, if you notice, that's the same style that Paul fights. It's the same style, but only he'd throw three times as many punches, and he'd get three times as much angles. So it's the same style. He would shut him down. Okay, he fought Winkie Wright. He said, Winkie Wright, you're not going to hit him. You can't do this with Winkie Wright. And Winkie Wright is a nice guy. Don't get me wrong, and I really love him. He's always been one of my favorites. And he's good, John. He's been my favorite fighter, so I'm being honest with you. And but what happens is, hey, he could not. I mean, Winkie Wright could not put up a defense that couldn't keep Paul from getting to it. So now once they saw that, and once they saw what Bernard did to Pavlik, then they knew Paul was going to do the same thing but going to improve on it. So, I mean, let's be real. Paul's been in every fight that he's gotten, he's been in the fight. From the fight that he lost, and he was supposed to lose that. The best thing could have ever happened to Paul Williams is for him to lose to Quintana. The very best thing.
Yeah.
Sir.
So
a first loss for a fighter like that is always a good thing.
Yeah,
I don't like undefeated records.
It was a blessing for him. It was definitely a blessing for him, no doubt about that.
What's it going to take to fix the middleweight division? It seems like ever since the politics of boxing did everything they could to get rid of Bernard Hopkins, they've been doing nothing but paying for it since. I mean, the division has gotten worse and worse.
What's it going to take?
A pattern
is set now out there in one or two divisions where, you know, hey, you can sign the fight on and you can claim an injury and you can get another 90 days or another 4 months until your opponent just get tired of it and runs away, like we're doing. You know, the pattern
right.
is set. If you get
the same
fight,
thing happened with Abraham. He had to leave the division.
Well,
so,
well, you're right. You know, we fought Antonio Margarita, and it was in the newspapers in Puerto Rico. As much as we tried to keep it quiet, we had a bruised rib, and we went to the hospital 4 days before the fight. But we fought anyway. You know, you take these guys today, you know, hey, you know, they cut their fingernail a little too close and they want to go surgery. Well, you know, it doesn't take that. You know, you just got to man up because, you know, boxing is a contact sport. How many fighters go in the ring and compete with injuries? I mean, when you're sparring in the ring such as they do to prepare themselves, sure they're going to come out with some injuries, and they're not going to be 100% prepared. And to hear what I'm hearing, it just doesn't make sense.
What is it about these fighters today, man, that what happened to the Marvin Hagler's and the Hitman Hearns? Why is it these guys don't want to fight no more? You got fighters like Paul Williams. He's the last of a dying breed, seem like to me. What happened in boxing to why these guys don't want to fight each other no more? Is it about the money or is it the politics? You know, we've been asking this question for a minute.
They're making more money now than they've ever made. No doubt about that. But the thing about it is nobody now wants to say, you know, hey, okay, nobody wants to accept the fact that, okay, that I can lose tonight, but I can go back to the gym and I can prepare myself to be a qualified fighter tomorrow night. You know, they don't want that. They don't want to accept the loss. So, you know, our motto is if you can accept winning, you've got to also accept losing. And hey, the best loss out there, I think Muhammad Ali was the greatest of them of all time. But he lost. He wasn't afraid to lose. He didn't mind losing. But he still was the greatest. But you take guys today, you know, hey, they just don't take a loss.
Well, the point is, the fact of the matter is they can't be great if they don't take the risk to be great. And you know, they got to go out there and take the risk to be great fighters. We can't call Kelly Pavlik the middleweight champion of the world. In my eyes, he ain't the middleweight champion because he ain't doing nothing right now. And it's just sad to see that this fight had to get pushed back so many times, and we wouldn't have seen this once ago.
Yeah.
So to me, at this point, there ain't no middleweight champion.
Yeah, well, you know, I have to agree with you, and we're saddening, and I hope the best for the young man. I think there's some other problems there, but I hope the best for him, and I hope that he can get those corrected because, you know, he tends to be a nice young man too, but he kind of got caught up in some things, and I think that, you know, and I'm hoping that he overcome those things and get back into the realm of boxing because I think he's a nice young man. But right now we don't need to go through what we're going through. Don't punish us because you're being punished for some other things. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, they punishing Paul because Paul be putting the punishment down in the ring. And I think that's the problem right there.
Hey, real quick, fellas. I think I got 97 Rub David Duane is on the line with me right now. Dave, you there, man?
I'm hearing stuff. I'm over here at the Taki Palace Casino and getting ready to kind of step in for the fights over here to start off. We got Manuel Casada and Edison Miranda, who's going to be fighting at 168. I heard that we got Mr. Peterson's, Mr. Paul Williams manager on the line. Is that right?
That's right.
How you doing, brother? Yeah, I know this has been a frustrating fight here to negotiate. With, I remember a while back when our PR was telling us that you had told them, you know, the T's have not been crossed and the I's have not been dotted, and it seems like it still hasn't been able to be put on paper so you guys can get in the ring and possibly taking the middleweight world champion away from Pavlik.
Well, you know, that's been our approach to this thing is being the best that Paul can possibly be. And of course, you know, Paul is one of those that they're suppressing his talent. And you know, I noticed the other day that they got three guys that refuse to fight Paul that's listed over top of him pound for pound. Man, I don't think it's right. But then who's to say that boxing is right? But you know, it's just things that you got to live with. But we're in a situation where if we can get the proper 47-pounder, we would fight that person. If we get the proper 54-pounder, we would fight that person. So we're just doing what the sanctioned body say you got to do in order to be a world champion, but still we're not getting what's due to us.
Yeah, let me ask you this, okay, because, you know, making 147 or making 154 or 160, in some ways, do you guys feel like you guys are set up for you guys to lose badly, because I fluctuated up and down and weight could take a toll to a fighter's body. Do you think this may be in some way of a way of deploying something to see a declining of your fighter because nobody wants to fight him, so they want to delete his weight so that he can look bad enough where they'll say, okay, now we'll give him a shot at the title?
Well, you know, I'm saying that you know, it's not a big issue for us to make those weights because, you know, this guy, he walks around at 57, 58, So if we walk the band to 57, 58, and we get into strenuous training, it's not an issue for him to make 47. But then, and the same thing applies to 54. So in other words, he's rocking in a rocking chair right in the middle of those weights. So, you know, you can either lose 7 to 8 pounds either way. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You know, the thing that puzzles me, though, is the only name out there for Kelly Pavlik to really mix it up with right now would be your fighter. I mean, why else would they not want to step in the ring? I know I heard about the whole medical issue, the injury, but I'm not buying it. I don't know if you're buying it, but me, honestly, I'm not buying that. I'm buying the fact that there is some self-doubt there in their camp. I think it's really a mental state where that this you know, Kelly is not there mentally wanting to step in there. Does it make you go like, oh, I mean, you guys have a name. You're the biggest fight out there. Fight fans wanted to see this fight. How disappointed are you guys right now at this moment? How discouraged are you guys really in believing that this fight being pushed over to another date, is it going to happen? Do you believe it's going to happen?
No, it's not going to happen, and we're not going to wait around for it to happen because this would be the fourth time, and you know, and we're intelligent enough to realize that it's just not going to happen. But see, for the most part, it's kind of discouraging in a sense to this young man because you know from day one you sort of enter the gym, a young man enter the gym. And his mind focuses, hey, if I become the world champion, then I can get all of these things and I can get all these fights. Well, that's not so. You know, you can become the world champion and you can be set on the shelf. I mean, nobody will say, hey, you know, let's dance. You know, and that's the case here. This has been the most disappointing thing, if we want to say a disappointment to Paul, is to get to the level that he's at and can't get fights.
Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, when I had spoken to Bob Arum back in December and I had asked him if this fight would happen, this is how long going your guys have been negotiating and trying to get this fight set up. He had said, you know, when the fight didn't go in the first time, he said, oh, I'm never going to deal with Paul Williams' camp. Don't ever ask me that question again. Now, the vice versa, the tables turned. Are you in that position now, or are you in that state of mind where you're like, you know what, I'm not dealing with Top Rank anymore? They're just full of it. They're not honoring their gentleman agreement. It's done.
Yeah, well, you know, we're not fooling a death with Pavlik anymore. I mean, that's out. You know, that's dead. That's zip. That's over. I think we hung around long enough.
I know that, but what I'm saying is that they badmouthed you guys the first time around. Is it now where your feeling is now mutual when they have badmouthed you guys, saying you guys didn't know how to do business?
Well,
you didn't know how to do business.
Everybody that knows boxing in the boxing community, they knew that wasn't nothing. They knew that was just a plot. You know what I mean? That's all it was. That's all that was a plot. So you know, hey, you know, see, though, any excuse is better than none. Any excuse that you render is better than no excuse. So that's what it was.
I've got a question for you as well. And this runs great risk of really hyping up one of the co-hosts here, Blood. But I have to get your comment on a lot of people are comparing Manny Pacquiao at this point to Henry Armstrong. And I think there's a fighter out there right now that should be compared to Henry Armstrong. It should more likely be Paul Williams. So what
well,
is your take
you know, it
on
was
that?
First, it was first mentioned Paul Williams. And I don't want to call no name, but it was first mentioned Paul Williams, and sure enough, it woke a few commentators up. And the very next time that it was mentioned, of course, it was mentioned with Pacquiao. The very next time, but sure enough, it was mentioned with Paul Williams. And all due respect, he should earn it. But before it's over with. You know, the whole world's going to know. You know, we've been real, real patient. Of course, you know, he's a young man. He's just turned 28 years old. So, you know, we've been real patient. Our day is going to come. Right now, they're suppressing this guy's talent and trying to suppress his aggressiveness. But that's not going to happen. It's only a matter of time. See, you can only fight these cab drivers so long. And you have to either fight or give up the title. One of the other.
Sounds like you got the right attitude about this whole thing. It's nice to hear that you guys are still positive. I mean, today I'm angry for you guys. You guys seem fine.
Yeah, we are.
Let me ask you something. I mean, if you really think about it, you guys are in a pretty good position. You know, we're talking about Henry Armstrong, but you guys already are good at 154. You guys have held titles at 147. So let's say this tablet fight does happen and you guys win it. You know, now you got the middleweight title. You've had the 154 title. Then you finish off with the fight against Shane Mosley with Floyd Mayweather. Then within 6 months to a year, you guys can be the greatest fighter of our era.
Yeah.
That would be the plan, but
I
they
like
got to get
you,
these people in the
I
ring.
Like you, I like what you said. What?
Yeah, you like what you're saying right there now. You like that idea.
Yeah, you got to get them in the ring, and that's not happening. That's not happening, no doubt about that.
See, I thought it's because you were happy of what I said, but not because it ain't never gonna happen.
No. I was happy the way you phrased that, no doubt about that. It's the categories, and I just know it's not happening. That's all. We've been trying to do exactly what you know, and in those same sequences that you mentioned for 4.5 years. And it's just not going to happen. We don't want to be fighting at 160 pounds. We don't want to be fighting at 154 pounds. We want to be fighting at 147 pounds. But because we can't get an opponent to fight us at that weight, we're forced to go up to 454. And we're forced to go up to 60. And chances are, if this fight, and we've even talked about it with Kelly Pavlik, After Paul do what he was going to do to Kelly Pavlik, would be forced to go up to 68, and he'd probably come in at 162 pounds.
Let me ask you a quick question. Why do you think it is that fighters like Floyd Mayweather, who pick and choose their opponents, get more recognition than somebody like Paul Williams, who can't even get a fight? He's calling out all the big names. People are avoiding him. But somebody like Mayweather could fight guys like Balamir or Earl Gotti and get more recognition than Paul Williams. Why is it like that?
He's
that right there.
He fascinates people. You know, he gets the 24/7, and they see him and they fall in love with him doing the mitt work. Look like a Gatling gun. But when he get in the ring, he throws 17, 18 punches around. people are fascinated with the things that they see him do. You know, and then he speaks very well. He promotes himself very well. So that's basically what that is. They'll give him that kind of time. Will they give you that kind of time? Will they give Paul Williams that kind of time? No, they won't do that. They won't do it. So he gets that. So that's why. That's why I was
speaking
talking
of
to a little kid yesterday. I was talking to a little kid yesterday that's 4.5 years old, and we walked out of this this restaurant. Was a Subway. We walked out of the sandwich shop, and it was a little kid that saw Paul's boxing gloves. He said, "Are you Mayweather? Are you Mayweather?"
Nah, he the guy who Mayweather don't want to fight. That's who he is.
since you brought up 168, I was going to say, since you brought up 168, if Jermaine Taylor can't continue in the Super 6 tournament and Showtime comes knocking on your door, would you guys jump in there?
Well, you know, we wouldn't want to jump in there just to be in that tournament. We would probably entertain the winner of that tournament, you know. But just to be in the tournament elimination, no, that wouldn't attract us at all.
You said 168. I had to bring it up.
no problem. But I'm saying just bring the best to us. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Who do you
like
think is the best at
168?
Who do you think is the best?
Well, they all are good fighters.
Should
Jermaine Taylor retire at this time?
Well, Jermaine, I think Jermaine got a couple of bad breaks. You know, what happened to Jermaine the last time could have happened to anybody. Because he got caught clean, and it was one punch. It was unlike before. I saw a lot of improvement with Jermaine Taylor this time. But that shot that he got hit with, it could have got taken anybody out. Could have taken anybody out, man. I don't like the idea of getting caught like he did the last three fights, but mm-hmm. but that particular one, I don't think he could have stopped that.
Mm-hmm.
He got caught clean in the center of the ring with one punch, and he had his mm-hmm. hands where they were supposed to be up. They were up. Hands were up, but where they're supposed to be. Yeah. I think he'd have knocked the mule out with that punch.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Peterson. Obviously, Paul's going to keep himself in training camp, make sure he keeps his December 5th date because, you know, he's a professional. He wants to be, you know, ready for whatever fight that might come. But let's say you guys get I don't want to say last-minute opponent, but let's say you only have 3 weeks to, say, either drop 6 pounds or drop 13 pounds or maybe prepare for a style that you're not ready for. I mean, what's Paul's training like? Is that something that he can work around? Does he always train for particular people, or is he really flexible?
He trains. Well, you know, of course he stays in shape, but once we find our opponent out, then we, you know, we critique to that. We train tough, our opponent. So it's not so much getting in shape, and I think that's what I've seen with boxers over the past. They say, well, I'm in condition, or I train hard, but how do they train hard, and what kind of condition do they get in for? We train for each fighter. You know what I'm saying?
So let's say you do get a guy, and let's say you get a welterweight, you know, let's say last month of training camp. You know, is the weight going to be a problem? Is that something you guys can legitimately handle, something we don't have to concern about?
Yeah. If we got a welterweight, right now Paul is weighing about 155 and a half right now. So if he's weighing one, you know, you're talking about 7.5 pounds. There's no problem. He can dry out and come real close to that. So, you know, you take a couple of days of drying out and some heavy sparring, last 4 or 5 days before the fight, he's fine. He's right on weight.
Isn't there going to come a time where he'll set his feet, though? Will he eventually set his feet? Because you can only do that for so long, going up and down and weight. I mean, he's still young right now, but is he looking at a division to establish himself in and become the man in that division?
Well, I tell you what we, you know, our approach to that 160 pounds was trying to stay there because we could be at that weight a long time. You know what I mean? Before we have to move. Up from there at 160, because you got to remember when he fought Winky Wright, we had to put on weight. We ate everything he could eat, and he came in weighing 157, and he ate breakfast that morning, a healthy breakfast, and morning of the weigh-in, and he came in 157. So what I'm saying is, he got a lot of pounds that he can spot. Even if we dominate, win the title at 160, we could be there for a while before we even think about going to 68.
We get it. Would you guys go after one of the other belts at 160, Felix Sturm or Sebastian Sylvester, any of the other guys?
Well, they know that we're around. They know that we're trying to get fights, and we tried.
Are you willing to go overseas for those fights?
Well, no, we're not concerned about going overseas, man. You know, we would entertain him coming here.
Okay.
You know?
Fair enough.
We would definitely do that.
I would love to see that because I think like you said, Kelly Pavlik could maybe take a run at Bernard Hopkins' you know, reign, the 10 years. Maybe he can make it 11 or 12. That would be exciting.
Yeah. But you know, I hope the best for the young man. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, I think that he would correct, you know, what problems he have, and he'll be back again in contention, but he'll never fight Paul Williams.
Right. And we wish the best for Paul Williams because it's unfair that he's moving up and down and calling out all these fighters and he's not getting the recognition. There's no way he should walk in his kids and they're calling him Mayweather.
And Mayweather won't fight him. That's right. So you know that had to be a sense of embarrassment. You know that, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Chris, you got any thoughts for Mr. Peterson?
I just have one question.
Who all online anyway?
There's like
myself, I'm David Chen. We got Blood, aka Marlon Jordan. from Florida. I'm from Maryland. We got Justin Streichhardt from Pennsylvania and Chris Herrera from Sacramento.
Yeah, I just have one question. With Paul, he's been in training, I'm sure, on and off for this fight for a while. With the cancellations and the delays and everything, does it affect him more physically or mentally, you know, gearing up for a certain date and then, the rug getting pulled out from under you guys?
Both. Because what happened is we got segments, and we work and by sequences, stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four in our fight. So that's so that we can peak at the right time. Timing is very, very important in training. And so when that happens like that, it throw our whole schedule off. It throws everything off. So then coming back, we have to come all the way back from zero just so we can peak on time. That's the way it is, and it's hard. It's very hard and expensive.
All right. Now, we all know Paul's a pretty level-headed fighter. You know, he's not a guy that seems to let his emotions get the best of him in the ring. Do you think when he finally gets in there, he's going to be pretty pissed off and just want to beat the living hell out of whoever is in front of him?
Oh yes. He feels that way because, you know, you got to remember, now we've been in training camp a long time. And this guy is biting the heads off of nails right now. You know what I mean? So he's ready to go. I mean, he's been ready to go. If this fight had taken place 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, he would have been ready. He's ready right now. If this fight take place tonight, this young man is ready. So now trying to keep him motivated. That's the hardest part. And, of course, that's my job, trying to keep him motivated and trying to keep him at a point where we don't overspill this thing. That's my job. That's another hard part. So
does he lose motivation sometimes waiting on these fights?
Well, you know, sometimes it does. Sometimes, you know, we have to break camp. We may have to say, okay, when I notice that, And I know him. I've been around. We together 24/7. When I notice that, we'll take 4 or 5 days off, or maybe a week off, just shut down for a week. And don't care how close we are to the fight time, we'll just shut down because mentally, you know, you got to realize you got to be mentally together, you got to be socially together, you got to be spiritually together, physically together. All those things has to gel. It's a melting pot. And once that you get that thing together, you realize when it's together. But then you realize when something isn't, the ingredient that you're looking for isn't just right there. So now you got to break out of there.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Peterson, we really appreciate you calling in and telling us what's been going on. I hope you guys come back and talk to us more when you find out some more about, you know, what's going to be happening with you guys, all right?
Well, just call me. We'll definitely be ready to go December the 5th, and we appreciate your concern, and we awfully also appreciate, you know, what support you've been rendering to Paul Williams in his camp, and we're going to say, hey, thanks a lot, fellas.
Absolutely.
Thank you all.
Come December 5th, and you guys are always welcome back on the show.
Okay, then. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thank you, sir.
Real quick, I think we got our friend from Puerto Rico, Rob Riddler, on the line. Rob, you there, man?
Yo, what's up, Ben? I never seen so many Paula lights in my life. Shit!
I don't know how much of that you heard, man. What'd you think about what Mr. George Peterson said about everything that's been going on with Paul Williams?
Paul Williams is a great guy, so I hope he gets a fight because Pavlik is a bitch. I'm tired of this shit. They need to take that nickname, the Ghost, away because, shit, it looks like he has a ghost stuck up his ass. Running all over
the place. Oh, boy. I thought you wasn't a Paul Williams fan. What happened all of a sudden?
Nah, man.
What I remember, you weren't much of a Paul Williams fan.
Nah, I mean, I don't agree with the Henry Armstrong stuff, but, you know, I'm tired of just bitching on Paul Williams. He's a nice guy. You know, he always puts on good shows. So if he can't get a fight, then he can't get a fight. So I don't really got nothing on him anymore. I'm not going to be a hater.
How'd you feel when Paul did that thing to Winky Wright?
What?
How'd you feel when Paul did the clinic on Winky Wright?
Well, I felt like it was I felt sort of happy because I'm tired of seeing Winky Wright old ass all up in the ring, losing fight after fight. And then he can't get a fight. When he gets in the ring, he does lose. You know, right, really,
come on, man. The man don't fight for once every 2 years.
I know, but still, it's like I'm tired of him. When we beat Tito, that shit broke my heart. As long
there it is, right there. That's it.
I'm gonna be honest. I'm not that big of a Tito fan, but that shit broke my heart. I was heartbroken right there. I couldn't come out of my room for like 3 weeks.
Guys, I want to go back real quick to our topic we were going over. You know, we got a few minutes. I want to go back to us talking about Manny Pacquiao and Miguel Cotto, because like I said, this weekend is going to be 24/7. We're going to get to see Manny's footage from his camp in the Philippines. And also, we've been seeing more of Cotto. We've been seeing his tattoos. He's been doing his gym work. He's been doing good in sparring. We've talked to Elgato Figueroa. I mean, Rob, what do you think? You know, I mean, is it still the same impression you have on the fight when it was first announced, or have your mind changed over the time?
Well, first, I just want to ask anybody if, you know how HBO has a YouTube, if they ever have been seeing those face-to-face videos? There was an episode on there where you can see Pacquiao saying, "Oh, I'm the fighter from the Philippines." And then Cotto, you can tell he's reading something like off the teleprompter, some shit like that. He's like, "I'm from Caguas, Puerto Rico." I can't believe HBO put that up. That was embarrassing. But, yeah.
Cotto always talks like that, though, don't he?
Yeah, but, like, you can tell by the way his eyes were moving, like he was actually reading something. I was like, what the fuck?
No, I don't think he can read English, homie. I don't think he can read.
Me neither. I don't think he's too used to that.
I don't think you can read English, bro, so I think you ought to cancel that one out right there.
They should have just let him say it in Spanish. But yeah, I still have the same impression. I just think the fight's going to come down to instincts, because like Angelo Dundee said, that these fighters, they just do a lot of things off of instincts. But at the end of the day, I think when it comes down to instincts, I think Cotto thinks on his feet a lot better than Pacquiao does. Pacquiao more or less needs Freddie Roach, so...
Pacquiao has become a more efficient fighter. You know, he kind of picked his spots in there, and you see him thinking in the ring. He's picking his spots. He's getting the punches off. He's counterpunching even. You know, he's doing very good on these things. He's definitely improving as a fighter. And Cotto, we don't know whether he's shot or not. I mean, the guy is still a big mystery, and it's going to be one of those. I mean, Freddie Roach is being Freddie Roach. He's calling for a one-round knockout now, first-round knockout. I mean, oh, the other times he was right. You know, he always says, "Well, my man's going to destroy his opponent," and he's just been right so far. But you know, is this another cruel joke on the part of Freddie Roach? Where does he have something, you know, in his mind that we don't know? What do you guys think, Chris Streichhardt? Go ahead.
I think he's about 8 rounds off. I have Pacquiao knocking him out in 9. But I mean, I don't know if you want me to go into all the reasons why, but I haven't changed my mind. I made up my mind a while back that it would probably be a knockout late by Pacquiao. I just think the speed is going to be a big factor, first of all. But really, if I want to break it down real quick, the short version, I think Cotto leaving that left hand low like he does is really going to be a problem for him, as well as his tendency to lean forward with his head. I think those two things are really going to be what puts the nail in the coffin. Whether it be a right hook or an uppercut, straight left, something's going to get through or around the side, and it's not going to be pretty. I think that left, that eye, he had the same cut open up in his last two fights. So in all likelihood, that cut's going to open up early too, and that's going to be bad news. So that's my call, man. 9 rounds, knockout Pacquiao. Go ahead, Chris. What do you think?
Honestly, I'm not really too big on making a prediction on the fight. I just want to talk about the build-up to the fight. I'm looking forward to the 24/7, but I'm not going to be fooled. I've said it previous 24/7s, and if all holds the same, it's going to be a one-sided fight. I'm not saying who's going to be the one dishing out the ass-whooping, but you watch any fight that's had a 24/7 treatment, it's been one-sided. So I think it's going to hold true again here. I'm just kind of curious to see if this fight gets the same kind of buzz that Mayweather-Marquez did, because initially, when those fights were both announced, I was looking more forward to this. But that Mayweather fight, man, ESPN got behind it. The mainstream press got behind it. And, you know, people were all on Pacquiao after he KO'd Haddon. You know, he was getting a lot of buzz as well. So I'm just curious to see if, you know, ESPN and all these other mainstream outlets are going to jump on it and promote the fight, and, you know, how it does numbers-wise against Mayweather's Marquez's fight. Because, you know, it may come to the winner or loser of this fight. It may come into negotiations of who Mayweather fights next.
Well, if the show's not doing
be bigger.
Because neither side is American. neither guy is an American superstar, so I don't know if the American media is going to get behind him. Do you think I'm right, Blood, or am I wrong?
Nah, I think you're wrong. I think that the media is going to get behind this fight. You know, the media tends to pick up, like we've talked about with Nate Campbell and those other guys. They don't really care if the fighter's American or not. They're going to go with what sells the tickets. And both names are big. Both of them have big fan bases. Pacquiao has the big Filipino fan base. Cotto has the big Puerto Rican fan base. And I think the fight will be well promoted. I think it's going to crush Mayweather Marquez in numbers.
I'll just say what I told you the other day on the phone, Dave. I couldn't get people to come over and split the pay-per-view for Mayweather with me. For Pacquiao Cotto, I got no problems. I mean, I won't even have to pay all that much to watch this fight. So based on that, I'd say it's about 5 or 10 times more popular and more in demand than that fight was. There's people excited about this.
And
even
if it doesn't
people
have
that
good ratings.
Mayweather, even the people that bought Mayweather, they all knew that Mayweather was going to win a one-sided fight unless a miracle happened. This is more exciting. Even though I'm calling for Pacquiao to win, one body shot could turn that around real quick. And he could get knocked out himself if he's not careful. So
I think the key factor is if Miguel Cotto could take Pacquiao's power. If he could take Pacquiao's power, I feel for Pacquiao.
Well, I was gonna say if the show doesn't do good ratings, they can always tell one of the fighters to drink their own piss, and then that would jump up the ratings.
Man, you never know. You might.
Well, maybe they should up it up, though. Maybe they should eat their own deuce, man. You got to take it a level up every time.
Fear
you
factor.
Pick it up 100 levels, then, bro.
Yeah, fear factor on 24/7.
All right, fellas, I'm gonna stop this real quick on that note because we gotta carry on real quick. I'm gonna make a quick announcement. On the 28th of November in Coachella, California, Champion Promotions will be hosting an event called Clash of the Gladiators, featuring some of the local professional fighters at the Spotlight 29 Casino. That's in Coachella, California, on November 28th. There will be more info on our website in the coming weeks. And real quick, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get our PR red to get in touch with our man, our first guest, Glenn Johnson, right? So, guys, take a break, take it easy, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
You tell me that there's love here, but to me it's flake. That's with all the blood here, dealing with slate. Plus with all the hate, it's hard to keep peace. Thou shalt not steal, but I will to eat. I tried doing good, but good's not too good for me. Misunderstood, why you chose the hood for me? Me, I'm a hype, I just had to work hard at it. With your grandma for answer, and she told me that God had it. So now here I am, confused and full of questions. Am I born to lose, or is this just a lesson? And who is gonna choose when it gets turned around? And will it be laying in my own blood and on the ground? My child, I watched you grow up and I've been there. Even at those times you least expected it, I was there. Right. And look at what I've given you, a talent to rhyme. I may not come when you call, but I'm always on time. Somebody's knocking, should I let them in? Lord, we're just starting, but where will it end? Somebody's knocking, should I let them in? No, put down the guns and write a new rhyme. Get it all in due time. You'll do fine, just have faith, cause you mine. And when you shine, it's gonna be a sight to behold. So don't fight to behold or lose sight when it's cold. See that light down the road? It's gonna guide you there. Two sets of footprints, I was right beside you there. But what about them times I only saw one? Those were the times when I was under the gun. It was then I carried you, my son. Led you to safety. It just wasn't your time to face. Hey yo, a few of them times I thought you would erase me. And all you did was embrace me, prepared me for the worst. Offered me eternal life, shared me with the hurt. And the curse turned to grace when the hurt turned to faith. No more running, sliding in the dirt, cause I'm safe. Somebody's knocking, should I let them in? Lord, we're just starting, but where will it end? Somebody's knocking, should I let them in? If I'm your man, I'm in your hands. What's your plan? Never had a friend, cause you couldn't trust a man. Learn to stand before I crawl, things were twisted. And if you showed me anything at all, then I missed it.
it. Looked the wrong way, I've done some wrong things.
True.
Kept a bad attitude, but that's what wrong brings. And now you mean to tell me that after all this time, it was you that kept the dog from going out of his mind? It was you that breathed life into my lungs when I was born. And it was you that let me know what was right from what was wrong. And it was you that let me do what I knew could be done. And it was you that gave me a good wife and a beautiful son. And it's been you speaking to me inside my mind. And it's been you who has forgiven time after time. It was you who opened my eyes. It was you, shine so light on me.
All right, everybody, and we're back. Once again, we're waiting on Glenn Johnson to call in. Our PR Red is looking to hit him up right now. Actually, it's Red's birthday today, and he's still at work right now, working hard, trying to get us our guests on. He's doing this for us before he goes out for the evening with his family. So, Red, happy birthday. We all appreciate you, man.
Happy birthday, Red.
Absolutely.
Happy birthday, man.
So, let's go back. I want to hear. All right, see, I'll give my take on the Pacquiao Cotto, because, you know, it's been a while since we talked about this, and I've been thinking about it. I still don't know who to pick, because every time I think about one guy, I like the other guy too, right? But and honestly, I just think about the build-up to this fight and the business sense of it, because to me, it's very important for this fight to not only be well-received in the media, be hyped up, be successful at the pay-per-view numbers, but also deliver on the entertainment, because I feel like if this fight is successful, then it's going to be good for boxing. You know, it wouldn't be as good if this fight somehow performs poorly compared to the Mayweather-Marquez fight. That would not be good for boxing. As for the fight itself, I mean, I keep thinking back to when Miguel Cotto fought Zab Judah, and I know that's not a perfect example, but Zab Judah was a southpaw with speed and power, and Cotto, to me, looked like he had all kinds of trouble in that fight, and he simply just can take more punishment than Judah could down the distance. I mean, Blood, is that a okay comparison?
Well, I think that, I mean, that's something to look at, but, in the end, Cotto got the best of that fight, but he did have some problems with Zab Judah, but I think Pacquiao brings something different to the table. I think the fact, a lot of people don't look at the fact that Zab Judah has fought so many fighters. I mean, he's fought everybody. Zab Judah's never taken a step back. You know, he's always taken all the hard fights. I would say that, you know, Zab Judah, you know, he could be a little bit bigger. He's bigger naturally than Pacquiao. He probably hits as hard as Pacquiao. And Zab Judah fought a good fight. I don't know if that's a fair comparison, honestly.
I think Zab
would beat Pacquiao's ass.
Yeah, it's very possible that Zab would overwhelm Pacquiao himself.
I think Pacquiao has
never fought anybody as big as Miguel Cotto before, and that's a fact.
I think the two differences that come between Pacquiao and Judah is that if Judah was as active as Pacquiao with his punches, he would be a severely dangerous opponent, but he's a lot nicer. Like, he has a lot more flash. The way he throws his uppercut, it's a lot sneakier. Pacquiao rarely throws uppercuts. He's a lot sneakier with his shots than Pacquiao is, which makes him so dangerous, but Pacquiao is just so active that makes him dangerous.
Right. I think, though, that you'll see maybe Pacquiao throw uppercuts, because it's obvious that Freddie Roach has been watching that fight a lot, because he's warning that he wants the fight stopped if Cotto throws low blows. And Cotto threw low blows, I mean, the most, when Zab Judah was catching him with those uppercuts.
Oh, yeah, that was a nasty low blow.
And we saw Freddie Roach, you know, pretty much teach Manny Pacquiao how to throw a right hook just for one fight. I wouldn't count out the fact that they're not working on uppercuts for this one. I would just caution them to take this fight a lot more seriously and not show your secret weapon on 24/7 over and over again like they did with Ricky Hatton, because that was craziness. When you go back and watch 24/7 after the fact, you pretty much see them throw that right hook in every clip of him training. It's craziness.
That was embarrassing. He was like, oh, right hook, roll under, and that's what he got caught with in the first round. That's some embarrassing
exactly.
shit.
Yeah,
I'd retire
they better
after
not
that.
Play anything
right, guys,
like that.
We got Mr. Glenn Johnson on the line with us, I believe. Red, do we got Mr. Johnson?
You doing, Mr. Johnson? Please go ahead, sir.
Glenn, how you
Hello?
Doing? Hello?
Again. Something must have happened. Hold on, I'm gonna be right back, bro.
All right, all right. Hopefully Red gets that working.
I guess I'll just complete my thought, which is it is a good comparison. You know, you could make a case that if Zab Judah just trained a little harder, was more focused and well-conditioned, that he might have been able to beat Miguel Cotto. But it's very easy to break Zab Judah's focus. That's one. So those low blows pretty much got his concentration was completely gone after that. And he gets winded. I mean, if you think Jermaine Taylor gets winded at the second half of the fight, watch Zab Judah fight. It's a lot worse for him.
I think people are overestimating the are not overestimating over just over examining the size in the fight. I don't think Cotto's going to use his size. I haven't really seen Cotto do a hat and try to bombard people. But I really think that at the end of the day, the better boxer will win. And I just think Cotto has a lot more options when it comes to boxing skills, like his jab and his straight right and all that.
I think Pacquiao is going to leave Cotto a lot more chances to counter than Zab Judah did too. Because Pacquiao's going to put a lot more pressure on. Yeah, they're both speed fighters, but I think they're two different types of fighters, Zab Judah and Pacquiao. Pacquiao's going to come in. He's going to put a lot more pressure. He leaves himself open a lot more. And, I just think that Miguel Cotto is going to end up catching him, and I think he could offer more than he could chew this time.
But before David Diaz, I would agree with you that he leaves himself open and he's crazy and wild, but ever since that David Diaz fight, it seems like he's become much more of a boxer-puncher than just a crazy Filipino monster. He actually goes in there with a game plan and really rarely gets caught at this point.
I think I have to disagree with that because, I mean, who has he fought since David Diaz, man? Come on, let's be real. We haven't seen him do anything. He fought De La Hoya and he fought Ricky Hatton. And the Ricky Hatton fight, come on.
He was the underdog going into De La Hoya. I will say that. But nobody really thought he could win that fight. Now, looking back at it, it was one-sided.
But what did De La Hoya do to prove that he's so much of more, that he's sharpened up his skills? He didn't do anything to prove that he sharpened his skills up. And Ricky Hatton damn sure didn't do that. All De La Hoya sat back and take punishment. That's all he did, pretty much. He's wild. Pacquiao comes in there with wild punches, and you know, he's going to leave himself a whole lot more opportunity for Cotto to counter, which Zab Judah is not. Pacquiao is more prone to doing that, to giving Miguel Cotto more chances to counter. Miguel Cotto is a smart fighter, man. You know, he's going to counter off all that sloppy stuff that Pacquiao comes in there with.
At the end of the day, I think a lot of people forget that it wasn't too long ago where Pacquiao was in the fight of his life against Marquez. And, you know, right now he had a weak, he sort of had a weak warm-up with Hatton going into a Cotto fight, and Cotto had pretty much one of the toughest fights of his career with Clady. And the thing is, Clady's a really big guy. He probably comes into the ring like around over 160. So when Pacquiao comes in there barely breaking 150, I think Cotto's going to feel a lot more comfortable, you know, just being on the inside.
I mean, people are marking him off, but let's not forget who he fought last. He fought Joshua Clady, man. I mean, come on. That's a whole big difference from fighting than Pacquiao's last opponent, which was Ricky Hatton.
Right, but that doesn't really bode well for Cotto because he took a beating, and his eye is messed up, man. You can mark this down as a side prediction for me. I don't think it'll be more than three rounds before that cut reopens. And that's going to be bad news because then he won't be able to see Pacquiao's right hook. He won't be able to see a whole lot of stuff. That fight might even get stopped because that eye is all kinds of jacked up.
Both fighters are known for, you know, how do I say, disfiguring their opponent's faces after a while.
It's not even going to take all that much for Cotto's eye to rip open. I mean, it took one headbutt from Clady, and that thing was wide open again from the Margarito beating he had. I mean, that was a simple headbutt, and that was a huge cut.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I think Pacquiao will cut Cotto, but I think as soon as Pacquiao cuts Cotto, I think he's going to get overconfident, and when he starts being aggressive, I think that's when Cotto's going to work in. The thing is, I think whoever leads in this fight is going to be a lot more vulnerable than the guy who's counterpunching.
Uh-huh.
Pacquiao might be faster, but Miguel Cotto fights way smarter than Pacquiao. Pacquiao comes in there throwing all kind of wild punches, lunging in and all kind of stuff. He ain't showing nothing that shows to me that he's sharpened up his skills, and not in his last two fights he hasn't, that's for sure.
I would totally disagree with you. Totally, absolutely disagree with you. He doesn't do that stuff.
But what he do? What did he do significant to show that he's improved his boxing skills against Haddon? Really, come on, let's be real. What did he do?
I'll get back to it. I think. Do we have Glenn Johnson though?
Yeah, guys.
I'm here.
Put that on the back burner real quick, Mr. Johnson. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. We're all good here, man. We're really glad to hear from you. How's training camp going? How are you feeling nowadays? Are you ready for this thing?
Oh man, I'm so ready. Everything is going good. I have a wonderful training camp, and we're peaking. We're ready. We're just waiting for November 7th.
God, it must have been. I mean, how long has it been since your first fight with Chad Dawes? It must have been over a year by now, right?
Yeah, it's over a year. I believe it's probably a year, about 14 months, maybe, or probably 15. I didn't do the math, but yeah, it's been over a year.
So tell us in your own words how you felt when after the fight. Obviously, you're like, what can I do to get this guy back in the ring again? And then he tells you, sorry, man, I'm probably going to be in two fights with Antonio Tarver.
Well, you know, it was very disappointing for me to know that, you know, the guy was going to try and avoid me as much as he could. You know, that was painful. But, you know, he got two fights with Antonio Tarver. People didn't seem to have any interest in either fight. But then, you know, he came down with the fans starting to ask for a rematch with Glenn Johnson, and the writers starting to write about a rematch with Glenn Johnson, and HBO heard the call and they said, hey, this is the guy, so let's get it done.
Let's take it back a little bit so we can put everything in perspective. After that fight, obviously you're not happy with the score. You're not happy about the decision. You wanted the rematch. Did the negotiations start right away? I mean, when did Chad Dawson start getting mixed up with Antonio Tarver? What did they say to you then?
Oh, I heard nothing. I mean, he basically cut me out of the picture right there in the ring when the reporter asked him if he wanted to give Glenn Johnson a rematch. He said no, he wants to move on, and that's what he did. They didn't said anything to me. We did not exchange another word, and any phone calls or any effort my people made with these people fell on deaf ears. And then next thing I know, that they were fighting Antonio Tarver, and after that they was having a rematch again, and until they start looking for another fight, you know, HBO kind of put their foot down and said, hey, listen, you guys need to do one of two things.
Now, the first fight, the scores are all kinds of funny, because you rarely see three judges coming up with the same score, especially when, in my opinion, all three scores were so off. It was 116, 112, 8 rounds to 4. Glenn, was it an 8 round to 4 fight?
I didn't see the fight 8 rounds to 4 for either one of us. I wouldn't take that score, because I know the fight was much, much closer than that. I believe I won the fight. But at the same time, I know I didn't win it by that margin. And and the way how you see the judges see the fight that way, you already know that from the minute the bell go bang, they was in dirty. And that's the reason why they come up with a score. They gave every single close round to Chad Dawson. And they gave all of the rounds that Dawson won, they gave it to him, and even some of the rounds that I won, they gave it to Dawson. So the only rounds that they gave me is the ones that were so clear they couldn't take it from me. And that's how you end up with that score.
So with this rematch coming up, you've already been in there for 12 rounds with him. You got a good handle on how he is. He's got a good handle on how you are. Who do you think learned more about each other in this fight? Do you think you are going to be the one who picks up the first round of the next fight as the 13th round of the first fight and go right back into it and exploit his weaknesses? Do you think you figured him out, or do you think he figured you out?
Well, I know I have him figured out, so I'm going to go in there and do what I'm supposed to do and take your business. I don't know what he figured out or what he might know, but I know I was the better guy in the ring that night. At the end of the day, that's how it's going to play out. And bottom line is, when you put two athletes together, the best athlete gonna show. You can everybody have a plan until they get hit. And that's what happened at the end of the day. We're going to get in the ring and we're going to go out blazing. And then once all the dust settles, we're going to see who's still doing what they're supposed to do and who's doing something different.
You're from Jamaica, and it's a country not known for having a huge boxing fan base. Is that still the case? Have you, with your accomplishments, not been able to really change the way they look at boxing over there?
No, Jamaica is not a big boxing community. We're big on track and field. We're big on soccer and cricket. We really haven't branched into boxing. All of our superstar in boxing, kind of struggle to build an audience. Guys like Mike McCollum and Trevor Burbick and a few other guys that I'm not remembering their name now, but it's been an uphill battle to try to capitalize on the Jamaican population with boxing. You know, Lennox Lewis been successful with it, but he got his support from England because he went over in England for a stadium for a long time. Kind of what I do here, came to America and been here for a long time, but I don't have the same recognition or the same following that the Americans follow me the same way or the English follow Lennox Lewis, because in England it's not the same amount of boxers or athletes to latch on to and to support. America have like tons of boxers, so the American boxing fan have their share of boxers to support. I have an up and down career as well. So, I only have the true boxing fans who really stuck with me. Some of the most glamorous boxing fans kind of scatter. They stick with mainly the undefeated guys.
Well, there's a huge West Indian community over in England too, There's a lot of Jamaicans over there.
That is true. But the thing about when Lennox Lewis was coming over here to the States and boxing, it was the British. It wasn't a lot of Jamaican that was making the trip across the ocean. It was mainly the British people. Just like when Ricky Hatton come over here and Joe Calzaghe, the British people are big on their boxers. They're huge boxing fans, and they take that trip. As much as we big boxing fans here in America, when one of our boxers leave America and go overseas, we don't go. We don't follow. I mean, if it's on HBO, we watch it from here, or if it's on overseas television broadcasting it, then we will look on the computer for the result, but we don't take that trip. But the English people, they take that trip from there over here, and they follow the athlete no matter where they go. So they're bananas about their boxers, and you're just not the same way in Jamaica.
Glenn, do you ever think, man, maybe I should have been a musician, and then life would have been easier for me?
A musician? Oh yeah, definitely. That was my first love. That's what I really wanted to do. Is be a musician, but. As a kid, you nobody can't explain to you that you're not a good singer or performer and all of that, because it's where you know. But as you get older, you realize rather quickly that dream is not going to happen.
You know, like we said, it's 14 months since the first fight, and obviously, more than a year, you're just waiting for this thing to happen. Do you ever lose track of time and think, I'm just going to maybe just forget it?
It has crossed my mind a few times. It got difficult at times. I fought in between that time against some lower key guys, and just trying to stay keep my name in the boxing world and trying to stay busy and stuff and try to keep the rust off. In the meantime, trying to get one of the major name guys. But none of the major name guys really wanted to step in the ring with me, including Chad Dawson, until HBO kind of put their foot down and said, listen, let's do this thing.
So in your opinion, what got you this fight? You know, who are the ones calling for this fight? You know, now we're at the internet age. Now that a lot of the boxing journalism is on the internet, a lot of fan chatter, a lot of discussions. You know, is this, you know, do you feel like the fans got you this fight? Do you feel like the discussion, you know, everything, the sport needs this fight?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everything. All of what you said is what got me the fight. The fans chatter, the media. But the biggest one is HBO. And the reason why HBO listen to the fans, because they're trying to please the fans and they listen to the media as well. So once they saw the activity and the websites and the computers and stuff, they pick up on it, and then they really kind of put their foot down and said, listen, this is the guy. You have two guys to choose from, and I was the only one that was willing and ready to fight off the two that they gave him to choose from. So he had to come my way.
I want to open this up to the rest of our co-hosts, Blood Marlon Jordan. Brother, go ahead, man.
Hey, Glenn Johnson. First of all, it's fun to talk to you, man. I got a real quick question for you. What does the Road Warrior plan to do different than he did the first time? I know you can't give us your whole game plan. What do you plan to do different so you can come out on top in this fight?
Well, I'm not going to give you any of my game plan, but I'm going to tell you. I tell you what. One thing that I will say, in the first fight, I heard him too late in the round. And before I could get him out there, the bell rang, and that's what saved him. So I will make more of an effort to try to get him hurt early in the round. That's going to give me more time to finish him, and that's about as much as out of my my plan I will give you. And we're definitely looking for the knockout. We're fighting in his hometown. We know, you know, everything is wrapped around him winning. And we know we're not even going to touch on the judges because we already know how crooked they are. So I know what I have to do, and we have all guns aimed that way, and we're going to make a big splash in Connecticut.
Well, Glenn,
okay.
I know, you know, you've already felt Chad Dawson's punches, so you know, now with that knowledge, is that why you think now you're comfortable with the idea of maybe starting and going after him earlier?
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, not just that, but, you know, in the first fight, I was off a little bit. I wasn't fine-tuned like I am now. So, you know, it took me a little while to warm up and to get going in the fight. But I'm much better now. I'm more fine-tuned. I'm more my normal self. So we believe that is a big key. And going into this fight, I mean, we have a tremendous training camp. Everything been so great. We're on schedule. I mean, we surpassed schedule. We're better than where we thought we would be at this point. So we're so excited. We're looking forward to this fight. Me and my team, we just know that we're going to go to Connecticut November 7th and make a splash. I mean, HBO not going to be disappointed. The fans that ask for this fight not going to be disappointed. And certainly the writer is going to have much more to write about.
Hey, Glenn, you got a few losses on your record, and pretty much all of them are controversial. Do you think that's because you're usually willing to go to the opponent's backyard and you've been a road warrior and you've gotten some bad decisions? And are you at a point where you just have to get that knockout? Because you look like, I mean, you were really fired up in that Griffin fight towards, like, this was round 11. You was bringing that heat. Like, you're not trying to leave it in the judges' hands anymore.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, that is the reason why I changed my style to be more of an aggressive fighter. You know, I was a boxer before, but after all the ripoff and the bad decision that comes along with being a boxer, I changed my style in the middle of my career and decided to be more aggressive to see if I could get more stoppage and try to knock people out and take the decision out of the judge's hand. So, you know, I really try to change that and make a difference that way. But, you know, Bernard Hopkins is still the one guy that a clear-cut win against me where there was no bad decision or anything. Bernard Hopkins pretty much handled that fight, and that's why I would love to have a rematch with him. But every other fight that I've been in, can certainly go either way. the ones them that I lost, and then there are just some pure robbery that's on my record as well.
What do you think about B-Hop and Jones fight now? They've been talking about it. I mean, you beat Roy Jones, and many people think that he has avoided you at this point. But what, do you think it's just too late for this fight to take place? Because many people would like to see Glenn Johnson and B-Hop do it again.
Well, I would love to see Glenn Johnson and B-Hop do it again, and I would love to see Glenn Johnson and Roy Jones do it again. I mean, let's face it, these are still the big name in the division. These guys still bring the most money to the table, and I believe I've put enough work in to get the big payday. So I would love to fight those guys. I believe that I beat both of them, and I'm willing to prove that. Bernard beat me, and I believe I've improved tremendously since then, and I don't think he can handle what I have to offer now. So,
you're talking about B-Hop? This B-Hop you're talking about?
Yeah.
Or Roy Jones?
No, Bernard Hopkins. No, Roy Jones. Come on. I don't think Roy Jones don't want to see me no more.
Roy Jones, he's been saying your name now. I heard him say your name. Now, do you think that he's just talking, or is that just, you know, is he just talking? Is he really willing to step up and fight you at this point?
Roy Jones been saying my name since 2004. He's still... What is it? 5 years later, you haven't done anything about it by just saying my name. That's the only thing you've been doing. So him saying my name don't mean anything to me. What he really wants to get a fight done, all he has to do is contact my people. I am not hard to get in the ring. If you want to get me in the ring, make a phone call and it happened. That's it. You know, it's not a difficult thing. But
you don't think he did good against Jeff Lacy, or do you just not really consider that fight?
No, he looked tremendous against Lacey. He looked real good. He looked like flashes of the old Roy Jones. But again, I'm not Lacey. So, you know, what he did against Lacey is good enough for Lacey. I mean, you know, he looked great, but I'm not Lacey. And you know those things not gonna work in the ring against me. But again, you know, your original question was about Bernard Hopkins and
yes, sir.
And Roy Jones fighting each other. And I think it's a great fight, and I don't think it's too late. I think those guys should have fought each other already, and they avoided for many years. But now, I mean, it's not like one guy is young and one guy is old. It's still some intrigue is still there to say, let's see what guy age or lost more over time than the other guy. So you still have that's going for them. And also the same thing with me. You know, we're all in the same age group, so let's see who's the best guy of the three or four older guy in the division that's still on top. So, you know, we can mix it up like that, and I'm willing to do that. But still the verdict is still out if the other guys are willing to mix it up with me. They might be willing to mix it up with each other, but I think they want to leave me out of the equation.
You know, a fight that I always wanted to see, and I always wonder why it never happened, because you fought Clinton Woods, you went over there. Why was it that you never fought Joe Calzaghe? Was you ever brought up as an opponent for him? Was there any discussion on this ever occurring? Because I heard some talk a few years ago that y'all might mix it up. Why didn't that fight ever take place, I wonder?
Well, Joe Calzaghe and I had 3 dates to fight, and he backed out of every one of them. The first one we had to fight was before the Roy Jones fight. That was our first date. As a matter of fact, when I won my title against Clinton Woods, Joe Calzaghe and I have 2 dates before I fought Roy Jones. We had 1 date, and he called and canceled the fight on my way to the airport to go to England to fight him. That was like a week before the fight. Then we rescheduled it because he only postponed it. So we rescheduled it. I think it was like 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks later he postponed it for. Okay. And then he called 2 weeks before the fight. That was like a week before we was going to go to the airport to get our flight arrangement, everything is set to go to England to fight this guy. And he called and postponed it again. I said, listen, cancel the fight, no more postponed, and let's move on and fight somebody else. And that's when the Roy Jones fight came up. And then after the Roy Jones fight, Joe Calzaghe and I discussed about fighting again. But he was never serious about fighting me because he was afraid. He was intimidated. And then the fight just never happened.
Tell me one more thing before I move on in the panel. Man, how do you do this at 40, man? I mean, you're in great shape, and you're 40 years old, and you're making these young guys look bad. How you do it, man?
Man, you know, I just have to give praise to God. Only He knows how come I could do it. I know that I have the desire. I know that I work hard, and I know that I still have a lot of hunger and a lot of things to prove within myself that I feel like I want to do, and I don't know if that's what keeping me young or keep me doing it the way how I'm doing it or whatever it is. But, you know, I just feel blessed, and I'm thankful that I'm able to do it at the level I'm doing it. And, you know, that's it, man. I feel good, and I don't think anybody at any age have anything over me right now. And I'm representing everybody over 30. We're not ready for the rocking chair. If we have some desire and we have goals and we want, and we really want it and willing to put in the work, we can achieve it. And I'm representing all of us. I'm going out there to show all these young cats that what they don't have, we still have it, and we can get it done.
Thank you, because I'm in my 30s, and that gives me motivation to get back out on that basketball court and all that. But strike hard, man. Pass it on.
All right.
I will.
Pleasure to speak with you, Glenn.
Hey, thank you guys for having me.
The first question I have for you is, why is it that you think that the politics and all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes in boxing has it out for you? Why is it that Glenn Johnson has never been a guy that's been made into the next star?
I don't know. I would say it has mainly to do with fan base, because, you know, TV network and promoters, they invest so much money into guys that they believe that's going to be stars, and guys that they believe that the fans are going to latch on to. Maybe they're from Mexico, that they have a big support system there. Maybe from Puerto Rico, they have a big support system. You know, could be an English guy or a guy from the Philippines. You know, those places that brought over big market value. Again, I'm from Jamaica. That doesn't really bring anything far as putting money in the promoter's pocket or HBO's pocket, far you know, putting butts in the seats and stuff. So they kind of feel like a guy like me coming and be a spoiler to their investment. They don't want that to happen. So the next best thing is to try to take the fight outside the ring within the judges. That is what I can say is a possibility. Now, if for that to be a fact, I don't know, but it seems to be the common thing that happens when you watch any fighter get robbed. It always have some kind of dollar sign attached to it. I remember a long time ago when they was talking so much about the Golden Boy fighting Bernard Hopkins. I know I sat and watched a guy from, I think he came from Germany, beat the crap out of the Golden Boy, and they just cold cut robbed him simply because they had a major fight set up between Bernard Hopkins and the Golden Boy.
Felix Sturm.
Right, they didn't want to see that mega fight didn't happen, so they rip it straight out from underneath the kid, and I felt so bad for that guy because none of us know what his life has been up until that point. He got his one shot. He took so much advantage of it. He came out and made a statement, and we rip it away from him. And now we rip it for a man that have millions and millions and millions of dollars who really don't need the opportunity. But this man put in so much dedication and come out and represent his one opportunity, his one chance that he got, and he came out and did it, and we took it. So when you look at that and you think about that, now what do you go home and tell his family? What do you tell his kids? How is he going to survive? Nobody know what happened to him. I've never heard anything else about him. I don't know what become of that guy. And that's sad, because that guy did the work to get another chance to make another major payday, even a rematch with Golden Boy. And even if Golden Boy could beat him on the rematch, then it still set up the big fight between him and B-Hop. Because he could say revenge is lost, but we didn't want that. We repeat away from him. So that always seems to be the sad case when it comes to boxing.
Yeah, and it's a shame, too, because real boxing fans, like all the people on this panel, really, more than anything, even when a guy loses, we really just look for the heart and the skill. And, I mean, I think you possess both. When you fight, you can see heart shine through. I mean, I know when I'm watching your fights that you're giving 110% every time. Back to the Joe Calzaghe debacle. One of the things that you've said many times was that when you had trained for Joe Calzaghe, that you were, like, in the best shape of your life and that you felt like you could beat anybody and you never really felt the same again after that. Is that still the case, or are you finally ready to say now after this training camp that you're feeling better than you did then?
Well, you know what? I this is as close as I felt to it. I really can't say I'm feeling better, but I could only say that I'm feeling pretty good, pretty close to that point where I was. I mean, you know, the Ry Jones fight coming off my training camp for Joe Calzaghe. You know, I'm coming straight off of that training camp and training for Joe Calzaghe twice and didn't get the fight. And then a few months later to get the Ry Jones fight. We only take, I think, 2 weeks off training to get ready for Ry Jones. So a lot of what I was doing for Joe Calzaghe shows in the Ry Jones fight. And I know I know he probably was jumping up and said, "Man, lucky thing I didn't get in the ring with that guy, because that's a monster."
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like they're exactly the same fighter, but they are very similar to a point. So that couldn't have helped Roy Jones either. How much did he underestimate you going into that fight? Because I really don't think that he expected that outcome whatsoever.
No, well, he didn't. Because for the most part, you know, guys at that level don't really have much respect for the guys them under them, you know. And then the fact that I have so much loss on my record even shows, make them believe more like, oh, this is an opponent guy coming up. They take it for granted that most of the losses on my record are robbery. And the ones them that's a real losses are close fights. And I only have one fight that I was blown out, and that was in the Bernard Hopkins fight. So they're not understanding what's going on, and they don't take the time out to learn anything and to pay attention to. They just feel like, well, I've been a superstar for as long as I've been a superstar. This guy, nobody heard of him, nowhere close to me, so his skills cannot be anything near mine. So they take that. And that's the reason why I learned to respect every fighter that step inside that ring, because I take everybody as serious as the best fighter that ever walked the planet. Why? Because not because you don't know of the guy doesn't mean that he's not a dangerous fighter, because there's a lot of unknown fighters that's out there that will rip a new hole into a lot of the fighters that have big names.
Right. Another thing that I've heard you say, too, is that when you go into the ring, you actually use some of these situations, like when you've been robbed or had close decisions not go your way, that you use that as what you're fighting in the ring rather than the actual opponent. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm very motivated once I step inside the ring, you know, because the robberies kind of direct my career. You know, the robberies that happened in my career kind of molded into what it is. It made me into the fighter I am. I don't believe I would be as good of a fighter as I am today if it wasn't for the robbery, because I would still be a boxer. I would try to be cute and and trying to do a lot of the stuff that other fighters are doing. But because of the robbery, it makes me more aggressive. It makes me more hungry and wanting to prove so much more to everyone. I try to take it away from the judges. I try to make it so one-sided that the judges have a heartbreak to rob me. So, you know, that only works in the benefit of the fans, that now they're able to see a more aggressive Glenn Johnson, and he's bringing the fight, and he's trying to make something happen. Even when the other guy trying to avoid the fight, he's trying to make the fight happen and trying to perform. Simply because I'm not looking for any rest time. I'm looking to continue to make the fight happen, to impress not just the judges, but most importantly the fans and the TV network, because I want them to bring me back.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you, too. I'm a little curious about a couple other matchups that never happened but were talked about for you. When Bernard Hopkins had finally moved away from Tomas Adamek, there was talk that you would fight him. Now, as it turns out, he's going to fight Galata in, like, a mega fight overseas. But what exactly happened? Why weren't you the next opponent for Tomas Adamek?
You know, I believe the TV network didn't want to pay what it would cost for the fight to happen to please both fighters. I believe that's what really happened there. I believe Adamek wanted X amount of dollars, and the TV network wasn't willing to pay it, and the negotiation kind of ends there. As far as what I was told by my people, you know,
uh-huh.
I never spoke
to
Adamek directly. That's basically what I was told. So,
yeah.
You know, that's why I was willing to fight the guy. I think it would have been a great fight. He's a similar fighter to I am. You know, he's a guy that comes forward and try to make the fight happen. And I'm the same. I believe that would be a fan-friendly fight and a TV fight. So, you know, it's just a shame that the network wasn't as excited as everybody else was about it to put up the money that it takes to make it happen.
Yeah, Tomas Adamek, and maybe he just needs to realize he can't really command for the dollars yet, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Another name is Adrian Danaku. I heard that name come up with you as well, and then as it turns out, he fought John Pascal. What happened there? Why were you again not the opponent?
Well, with Adrian, he had a mandatory with Silvio Branco. That would not go away. There was nothing, you know, there's nothing they could do to make that guy go away, so he and I could fight. So, and it's surprising to me after all that time that they say, well, they have to fight Silvio Branco, and then they gave Silvio Branco step aside money to fight. I think, what was his name? Henry something. I forgot his name. Henry somebody. He fought, and I went to that fight. Then, after that fight, then they couldn't give him no step-aside money anymore. They had to fight him. Then, at my surprise, they gave him, they did something, because he ended up fighting Pascal instead of Silvio, and then Pascal fought Silvio. After he won the title, and now Pascal and Diakono is going to have a rematch again. So they basically kind of just tie up, you know, those three guys, you know, wind them up together and did their thing and kind of left me out of the equation.
That seems all too often the case for you, man. And those boxing politics make your head spin.
Yeah,
hear all about what goes on behind the scenes. Silvio Branco is actually another guy that you had lost a decision to that, you know, maybe some people say shouldn't have been a loss. Do you want to go a little bit into that, since you brought up his name in that whole equation?
Out of all the robberies that happened in my career, Silvio Branco is the biggest robbery that ever happened. If you ever see a robbery with me, you say, man, that's a big robbery. Man, that's a big robbery against Glenn Johnson. With anybody that you ever see me get robbed against, Silvio Branco was twice a bigger robbery. The guy won one round in 12, and they gave it to him. So I don't know what else I needed to do. I had him hurt like 4 or 5 times in different rounds, almost out on his feet. But I was just too tired to take him out, and they still gave it to him. The guy that was driving me around, who worked for the promoter, he was driving me while I was in Italy, break down and cry in the ring. This is a guy that I don't know. He was only my driver for, I think, like a little over a week. He was driving me around the city. He break down and cry. Say he can't believe what they did to him. He's ashamed of his people. I said, hey, it is what it is, man. So, you know, Silver Bronco is definitely my biggest robbery of my career.
Wow. One last thing. This is just to humor me, because I had a funny story happen to me watching your last fight with Daniel Judah. I was sitting in my living room and enjoying the fight, as I always do. No matter who's fighting, really, it takes a lot for me not to enjoy something. But in the first round of your fight, the one where you knocked Daniel Judah down, I am watching it, and the emergency broadcast system comes on. And it's on for about 30 seconds to a minute. I don't know. I was pretty upset and standing up and yelling at my television. And after the TV set comes back on, I see Daniel Judah getting up off the canvas. And I've seen the replay, and I've heard everybody else talk about it, but why don't you tell me exactly what happened, since I was unable to see it, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, the Daniel Judah fight was a fight that I wanted a long time. I beat him clearly in Connecticut, and they robbed me there and called it a draw, and I've been wanting that fight for a while. So when he came up where his name was in the pot of about 3 or 4 guys, I said, Daniel Judah is the guy I want. And so we got that fight. And then, you know, our train got ready. Press conference, he said that he finally got the fight he wanted. He was robbed. He beat me, blah, blah, blah. And, he's going to really take care of business now. So,
uh-huh.
You know, that kind of got me warmed up. I was really excited about the fight. And when the bell rang, when we got in the first one and the bell rang, I really wanted to make a statement. And I really thought I was going to get him out of there in that first round. That was my feelings going in the fight. And then when the opportunity presented itself, and it was a solid shot, I really kind of fake him to the body and come up to the top with the right hand, and he fell for it. And it was a clean shot. Solid shot. I thought he would have been out. It would have been over. But he got up and he was able to maneuver and survived it. And it ended up being a long night, longer than I thought it would be. But it is what it is. He's tougher than I thought he was. And he also came into training camp and worked with me for this fight for like the first 2 weeks of sparring. And, I get to meet the guy and finally spend some time and talk with him and stuff. And actually, he's a cool guy. So,
really?
I wish him the best with his career. So,
Because I actually heard a comment that he supposedly made, that he had claimed that you had to have been on steroids in order to be able to hurt you at 40 years old.
Yeah. I asked him about that, too. He said, man, after what you did to me, I had to say something. I said, listen, more people talk about, I get more coverage on that than I actually got about the fight itself. So it's just more publicity for me anyway. So I didn't really pay that much attention. I didn't really put that to any, put it to my brain or my thought process too much, because I know I'm a clean guy. I've always been a clean guy, and I don't do any form of drugs. So, I wasn't worrying about that. Anybody can test me anytime. So, I was comfortable in my skin. It was nothing for me to be alert about.
We were supposed to have Chad Dawson on here with you so you guys could talk to each other. But he was not, for whatever reason, he's not here. So I don't even have to hide the fact that I'm rooting for you in this fight and be professional about it. I'm rooting for you, and I really hope and wish for the best for you, because you're one of those guys that I really feel like has been screwed over so many times. And at your age, if it doesn't happen for you soon, it won't happen. So with that said, good luck. I'm going to pass it on to Chris.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
How are you doing, Glenn? Man, you pretty much have already answered all the questions I had, so I only have two quick questions for you. First off, you mentioned, you know, how bad you wanted the Calzaghe fight that never came around and how you still desire a rematch for Bernard Hopkins. If you got a chance to get one, either one of those fights before your career is over, which would you rather have and why?
Well, if I only have one of those two fights, I would take the Joe Calzaghe fight, and it would be a few reasons why I would take that fight. One, the main reason is I believe Joe Calzaghe will bring more money to the table than a Bernard Hopkins, and Joe Calzaghe did beat Bernard Hopkins, so if I go out and make a statement with Joe Calzaghe, it's kind of cover both situation. Even though we know style make fight, but I will always have that say that I beat the man who beat the man, as we all know that say. So that, you know, for both for financially and for bragging rights, fighting Joe Calzaghe would be the ideal thing to do. But not, with all of that said, I would still love to fight the man who beat me, which is Bernard Hopkins. But if I only have to choose one guy, then I would rather choose the guy who beat the guy.
All right. My one other question is, unlike a lot of fighters, more so nowadays, you yourself, along with Bernard Hopkins and a few others, seem to have much better or much bigger resurgence later in your career. You know, you just seem to be peaking even later, you know, the older you get. Thinking about that, is there anything in your career, whether you were younger or, you know, any of the fights where you kind of got the short end of the stick, is there anything just in general in your career you would have done differently leading up to this point? Are you pretty content with the way things turned out?
You know, I always say a lot of times it's best to leave well alone, because if things have been different, you don't know how you would end up. But when you know how you end up, then it's always, I mean, I'm not in a hurtful position. I'm very thankful for my career. I'm very thankful for who I am and who I've become and my accomplishments. You know, I'm one of those underdog guys that, for the most part, the name people in boxing, far as the people who make the decision and believe that they know everything, never believed that I would accomplish what I accomplished, and I accomplish it despite the odds. And even though the odds was against me in a major way, I still accomplish it. Now, can we all imagine if the odds was in my favor, how much more I could have accomplished? And that's all I left with. If you have an imagination, then you could simply use it and see if things was in my favor, I could accomplish so much more. And that is all we left with.
All right. Go ahead, David.
Glenn, if it's all right with you, let's take a few questions from a few callers that are on the line with us right now.
Yeah, sure.
Rob from Puerto Rico, a good friend of our show. Rob, go ahead, man, and ask Glenn Johnson your question.
Hello, Glenn. I just wanted to ask, if you were the president of boxing and you ruled everything, what would you change or what would you do?
The thing that I would do something similar to what the NFL is doing and the NBA, where you have somebody that oversees the boxing, that make all the decision, who could rally and get TV network, get sponsors, get everything that the boxers have, just somebody that everybody have to answer to, all the officials, everyone have to answer to that particular guy. And then have something similar to what the Super 6 is doing now in every weight class, which I would make it the Super 10. In the 10 best fighters in the world in every weight class have a box off every year. And that's how I would go about it. So there would be no politics, no try to save this guy, not just try to save this guy from to be undefeated and all of that. And I would take the undefeated equation out of it, because in no other sport you are required to be undefeated. Even in team sport, there's even the championship that happened in basketball. They're not undefeated. Football, not undefeated. Tiger Woods, not undefeated. Any sport you want to think of, they're not undefeated. Nobody is required to be undefeated to be a mega star, you know, race car drivers, whatever. So I don't know what is all this undefeated status that they try to put on boxers. It's killing the sport, because that stigma prevent fighters from taking on risk with other good fighters who is a threat to beat them. Because what they do, once they realize that they're in that position where they have a threat, they try to avoid that fighter. And once you start avoiding a fighter, then the fans is missing out on a good fight, or maybe the best fight that's in that division. So that is killing the sport. So that would be the first thing that I change in boxing.
Well,
hey Glenn, speaking of the Super Six though, what did you think about the first couple of fights, the Jermaine Taylor fight and the Froch Darrell fight? Do you think Jermaine should retire at this time? Do you think Darrell was robbed?
I think Darrell was robbed. And as far as Jermaine, I mean, Jermaine is a good associate of mine. You know, I think he need to really take a moment and see where he is now and what his status is financially, and if this is something he really has to continue doing. And really evaluate everything. Just really sit down and maybe talk to his family or whatever it is that he needs to do, and really see if this is something he still want to do. I can't make a decision for the man if he should retire or not. You know, I think that's something he has to really look at. He knows how he feels. He has to go through all the medical stuff that he has to go through to see where he is. He got knocked out pretty badly in two back-to-back fights. I know Wright Jones went through the same thing, and he's still boxing. So who am I to say what is the right thing for the man? I think you have to really take a look at it and make that decision, and the best decision for him.
Who you favor in the contest, if you had to pick somebody?
I would pick the winner of the upcoming fight. I believe the winner of that fight have the best chance of winning the Super Six between Ward and Kessler, I think. Yeah, Kessler and Ward. I think those two guys, whoever the winner is, that fight, I think, should be favorite to win the Super Six.
All right.
Let's go to the switchboard. We have a caller from the area code 619. Caller, you're on the air. Introduce yourself and ask Glenn Johnson your question. Caller from 619. All right, we'll move on real quick. Maybe we'll come back to him. Caller from area code 281, you're on the air. Well, everybody's quiet today. Let's move on. Caller from the area code 215, you're on the air.
Two one five.
Sounds like Guard Your Grill right there. Where are you guys at?
Oh, man, I'm so sorry, man. My phone was on mute, man. How you guys doing?
How's it going?
What's on, man? How you doing?
What's going on?
Good. How's everything, champ? How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm hanging in.
That's good. That's good. It's a pleasure to have you on. A pleasure to be on the show, guys. Hey, I just wanted to ask you, I don't know if the question's been asked already, but you know, in preparation for the Dawson fight, do you see any adjustments that you're going to do in this fight and the way you're approaching it? And do you have a different strategy that you want to share with us? I mean, I know I tell my colleagues a lot of the time that, you know, a lot of these people talk about how people have been robbed a lot. And I always think about, when I think about, how Glenn Johnson has really never lost a fight, maybe just one. That was Bernard Hopkins, the first fight. But the other fights have kind of been questionable, so that's just a true testament of a champion that you are, a competitor. But do you have any different strategies or anything that you're going to do in this upcoming fight with Chad Dawson?
Yeah, I have a few things I'm going to do a little differently, but you're also going to see a lot of what I've done as well. But, you know, I'm not going to really say anything about that. I'm not going to, you know, tell it, and then Chad Dawson might be listening and make some adjustments, try to see if he can save himself the knockout. So we're going to keep that on the down low so the fight can be a little more exciting for all of us. What do you say about that?
Well, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea not to tell the secrets of war.
Well, Glenn, I know that it's late over there for you, and we want you to get your rest. You're in training camp and everything. We really appreciate you coming on to the show tonight and talk with us. And we all are looking forward to see you back in the ring, and we wish you luck.
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for letting me talk to your audience, and I appreciate the moment. And you guys take care of yourself, and look forward to a great fight November 7th. And
good luck, man. Good luck.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Bye. Take care now. Well, guys, that was Glenn Johnson. Strikehearts, man, if I know you, I know Glenn Johnson was going to be a fighter that you liked, and that turned out to be a case. Am I right?
Hell yeah, dude. It's people that are held down like that are Strikehearts' people. So, yeah, Glenn Johnson is in my you know, little group of fighters that I like a lot. Yeah, totally. I don't like guys that get shit on all the time. Excuse my French, but those are the people that I gravitate to and root for every time.
And also, you know, it's not like Glenn Johnson is somebody who's having a hard time getting his shot and we're trying to get his name out there. You know, this guy was Ring Magazine's Fighter of the Year in 2004. He at one time had beaten everybody in his division. Chris, what do you think of Glenn Johnson as a fighter? And tell us a little bit about what you thought about his first match with Chad Dawson.
First off, I'm amazed at the man's just, I don't know, I mean, a guy his age, you know, Bernard Hopkins is very successful at this age, as was George Foreman to a degree, but they were very economical with their punch output. You know, Glenn Johnson just goes in there and just throws down for 12, 10, however many rounds a fight goes. The guy's motor never seems to slow down. I mean, in regards to the Chad Dawson, the first fight, he was coming on stronger the further the fight went. You know, and I think he made a perfect point when he said what the mistake was that he made in the fight is he didn't, you know, really apply enough pressure to hurt Dawson early because he did catch Dawson late. And, you know, he did stun him on more than one occasion, but he just ran out of time. It was like, you know, there was a little too much sand left in the hourglass, if you know what I'm saying. And he's looking on changing that. But I'm just amazed at the man's, you know, his will and someone who's been screwed over as many times as he has to use that as fuel and just go back and, you know, train and, you know, fight that much harder rather than let the game kind of spoil him and sour him to it.
Right. Another thing I like about him a lot, too, and another thing I always like, is that he's pretty much made his own career. He isn't a guy that had this illustrious amateur background and came up in, some famous gym. He just went and worked out and had a, you know, what, like 30 or 40 amateur fights, and then he went undefeated until he was able to challenge Bernard Hopkins for his title. So the guy's made his own career. Unfortunately, he has been screwed over that many times. But it's another thing that Strikehearts really likes is when the guy can do it on his own without a big promotional company behind him.
Well, Ed, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree, man. He moved from Jamaica to Florida at a young age, and He, like Strikehart just said, he didn't have too many amateur fights. He went out there, he did what he had to do. And most of his career, he's been on the road. He'll go into somebody's backyard and get robbed. But this man has a true road warrior. He lives up to that name. You know, he's represented the name fullest. I got to give it up to Glenn Johnson. You know, I got a lot of respect for him. I know this don't have anything to do with fighting, but he is a stand-up guy, man, good citizen. Really positive, and man, I wish the best for him. Him being a throwback fighter, willing to go in anybody's backyard. I mean, he deserves his time, man, in the limelight. I hope he comes through in this fight. I think Chad Dawson will probably win the fight off of the distance, but I would like to see if Glenn Johnson wins. It'll be a happy night for me because I think Chad Dawson, you know, he's a lot younger and he could always come back and do something later down the road.
Blood, is Glenn Johnson not the perfect example of the idea that it don't matter how many good fights a guy puts on unless he's a perfect packaged product that the industry and the people are looking at, he's just not going to make it in this sport?
Man, like you were saying earlier, man, there was a certain fight he had
I forgot which fight he was talking about, but he was talking about a certain fight that they didn't want to put out the money for the fight and everything. You know, I think it's sad that fighters like him who have given so much to the sport, unlike some other fighters, people are not willing to put forth the money to promote this guy. I mean, this guy, somebody needs to know his story. Somebody needs to know on how this guy is willing to take any fight and willing to travel on the road and go in anybody's backyard and fight him, man. He should get some points for that alone.
Any last thoughts, guys, on Glenn Johnson? Anything that he brought up?
Well, I just wanted to say, like, you know how the Bob Arum undercard is not going over the Pacquiao fight? How come guys like Glenn Johnson, who just, you know, they always pretty much put on a really good show, how come these guys don't get spots on the undercard? I mean, those are pretty good fights and pretty big cards, and these guys could, you know, it goes well both ways. I don't understand why that doesn't ever go down like that.
Well, I think it's because a lot of the undercard fights are just saved up for, you know, they're there to hype up future events. You see what I'm saying? And then Glenn Johnson's never going to be a pay-per-view guy, so they're not going to put him on an undercard because they don't plan on putting him up there later. That's, you know, that would be my take on it. But yeah, guys, we gotta cover this topic, man, because you know we're
what topic?
We gotta mention the Super Six Super Middleweight Tournament. We got the two first fights in the books. One of them with a decisive result. The other one, not so much, right? First, we gotta talk about Jermaine Taylor, man. I mean, is this a cruel joke or what? I mean, you can't really even make this joke before the fight happens, saying Jermaine's gonna be knocked out in the last 6 seconds of the fight, but it came true anyway, and I couldn't even say anything. I kind of just sat in my room, like, you know, almost like, should I be upset right now? You see what I mean? I mean, with all due credit to Arthur Abraham, you know, this really puts this tournament in perspective, because now we got a guy after his first fight looking like he needs to step out of the tournament, and, you know, who knows if Showtime has a proper way of, you know, arranging this tournament so that a replacement is even feasible. Chris, what do you think about this fight between Arthur Abraham and Jermaine Taylor?
Well, I'm glad I didn't read the text you sent me, because even though it didn't say who won, it gave me the, you know, had a little emphatic thing that I would have, you know, I thought the fight was just going to go through, it looked like it was going through the motions, you know, it was just going to go 12 rounds by the 10th, 11th round, and then, you know, Abraham just came out of nowhere and just, you know, short-circuited Jermaine Taylor, for lack of a better term. And, you know, I'm like you, you know. I mean, I felt bad for Jermaine Taylor, you know. He's a good guy. You know, I don't want to see anyone get just knocked out. I mean, granted, that's part of the game, but I just didn't want to see it happen. I felt bad for the guy. And, you know, he was definitely the guy, I think, that people least expected to win this tournament. And even more so now, you know, I don't see how he's going to be able to beat Kessler, you know, who I know is his third matchup, and Ward's in the next round. I honestly don't see him beating Ward either, you know. I know Alan Green's possible replacement. I don't see him really being much more of a better replacement, but I don't know where Taylor goes from here. But Abraham definitely made the statement that I think any of these fighters were looking to make in the first round, as far as, like, when you say, who do you think is going to win this tournament? Abraham was the first guy to come out and make a real emphatic statement as to, you know, who has, you know, put their best foot forward, I guess I should say.
Right, yeah. He had Kessler looking
think,
on the sideline.
Go for it.
I'll just comment on what Chris just finished saying, is that Kessler, you could see it in his face. He was like, okay, Abraham's here. he gave a real serious look, like, oh, man, I'm going to have to go face that guy soon. But I don't know. After, like, the eighth round, I could see Taylor getting really, really, really tired. And I kept yelling at Abraham. I was like, oh, come on, man, throw that right hook. That right hook's right there, that right hook. And then at the very end of the fight, it ended up being a straight right. And the funny part was, as Jermaine Taylor moved his glove, he thought it was going to be a right hook, and it ended up coming straight down the pike. And, wow, what a shot. So I was wrong, and Abraham knew what he was doing in there. He threw that straight right at just the right time. So, wow. That's all I really have to say. I mean, as far as do I feel bad for Jermaine Taylor, I do to a point. I'm finally starting to feel bad for him after all these years of being sour over the whole Bernard Hopkins mess. But I don't know. We really have to look into this, man. I think Bernard Hopkins put some kind of hex on that title, because anybody who touches it, bad things happen. That's all I got to say. That's my impression. What do you think, Blood?
Man, I think at this point, Jermaine Taylor, well, first of all, I was looking at the fight. He was popping the left jab. It didn't really seem to be doing much. He was kind of pawing with it throughout the fight. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but Jermaine Taylor, he swells up pretty quick, too. Like, by the sixth or seventh round in these fights, he swells up pretty bad. But, you know, he was pawing it out, and then Abraham's, you know, he kind of backed off of him a little bit. He started playing with him a little bit. I think that Abraham pretty much had the fight in his hands. And, you know, he caught him at the end, he dropped him. And at this point, I think Taylor needs to take a break, man. I really do. I think that he needs to come out of this tournament. No love lost, man. He's a warrior. He's been a world champion before. But right now, man, he just needs to put his head up a little bit. And I think they need a replacement, man, at this time.
Yeah, I would agree.
I don't know
how
the point system either.
I think he should retire. I think
yeah, it's probably, you know, he stacked his chips from what I heard. I heard that he's doing good. So I don't really see no point in him going in there. I don't want to see Jermaine Taylor get hurt. He's a good guy, stand-up guy. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to see none of these fighters get hurt, man. And, you know, he took a hard shot. You see how his hand, when he hit that canvas, how his hand was raised up. And, you know, you see stuff like that, man. You just want to wish for the fighter's health, and you don't want to see anybody get hurt. So at this point, they need a replacement. I don't really like the point system that they're doing either. I think it should have been an elimination tournament. But, you know, hey, that's a whole different story. But, you know, only Jermaine Taylor know what he wants to do, man. What's going on in his mind could be totally different than what we think, what we're talking about.
I just wanted to ask anybody, did anybody get the sense that Abraham was carrying Taylor for some reason? Because he kept looking at the clock, and then he smiled at Taylor before he hit him at the final round. I was like, what the hell? Cause the funny thing was,
he did keep looking around.
Because the funny thing was, I actually woke up in round six, something like that. I was sleeping, and then I woke up, I messaged Chicky, and she was like, oh, this crap is going to go the distance. This is going to look horrible. As soon as I flipped to the other channel, all I see is Taylor go down, and I just ran around the house screaming like one of those white blonde girls on Girls Gone Wild. But, but yeah, I just got the feeling like he was carrying Taylor the whole fight, and then he just decided to make a statement, because it's not the first time Abraham has knocked somebody out with a few seconds left in this whole round. He's done this like four times.
I don't think Abraham planned to knock him out at the very end. He finally caught him at a good time, but, I don't think that was anything that was planned. Jermaine Taylor doesn't fight with the same mindset that he used to fight with. After that Pavlik fight, he seemed to kind of fight scary at times, you know. He doesn't work off his jab as much as he used to. I don't know if y'all noticed that. It seems like he don't want to take those risks anymore, man. I don't really know if his mindset is the same as it used to be.
Jermaine Taylor is
not the fighter he was.
Yeah, he's not bad intentions anymore. He has good intentions now.
Yo, real quick, what else Blood said there, that's another thing I wanted to mention, I forgot. You know, Jermaine just didn't commit to his punches. You know, he flicked that jab out there, there was nothing on it. There were maybe two or three times in the fight where he actually threw the right behind the jab, and he landed it, you know, with a little bit of pop on it. And his cornerman was telling him, you know, throw that 1-2. He wouldn't commit to it. You know, not saying it would have helped him that much, but it would have been a little bit more effective. And I think that what that boils down to is a lack of confidence. And the way this fight ended is just going to hurt him that much more. And, you know, regaining confidence, you know, at that level, I just don't know if he'll be able to get it the way he did in those first two Hopkins fights.
Does anybody have a problem with the referee in that fight with the low blows? Personally, I actually think, especially after having seen the replays from Showtime, that the blows were actually pretty low. But I've heard a lot of people say that the referee was favoring Abraham. I actually didn't get that sense whatsoever.
I think
anybody have a different take on that?
I think the uppercut to the balls was uncalled for, but there was a little combination that was sort of on the belt line. It's just when Abraham puts his guard up, he sort of hunches over in a way that pushes his belt line up a little bit. So, you know, when he gets hit, when you try to commit to the body, it's bound to go low. But
right. And I don't think that he was hurt, but I mean, I think he was very smart for complaining about it.
After watching,
it was kind of a vet move.
After watching Frotch Durrell and that referee and the job he did in there, I have no complaints about
that. I heard that.
Hold on. If anyone wants to talk about that, please do so. I mean, Blood, Strike Arts, David, you know,
hold
Robin, anyone want to talk about that?
You, because we got an international call from the UK, from the United Kingdom, and I believe it is a good friend, the boxing historian.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You there,
hello,
historian?
Hello, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes,
yeah, we can hear you.
Hi. I just wanted to say first about Blood, what you were saying a couple of seconds ago there about Glenn Johnson. The guy's a warrior, even back here in the UK. I respect that man, total respect for. He travels everywhere to backyards, like you were saying. And the guy's a warrior, you know.
Hey, is the fight over? If the fight between Calzaghe and Johnson had ever happened, would the UK have embraced that fight, man?
Definitely. See, the thing is, the Glenn Johnson, he's not got all this big promotional thing behind him and all the garbage that goes along with most of the fighters. He's a true throwback fighter. He just wants to get into the ring and to do his stuff, you know. That fight would have been a good fight, yeah, Calzaghe. The reason I phoned up, guys, I missed a bit of the show tonight, and I never heard anybody talking so far about the Froch Derrell result.
Right, we were about to get into that, I believe. And
so, hey, boxing historian, who do you think won the fight between Froch and Derrell?
I scored the fight Derrell by one round. I had it. I had him winning it by one round. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't a pretty fight, and I can see how. He never got the decision. He never fought like a champion. In certain parts of the fight, he was complaining. He was going down to the canvas numerous amount of times. What do you guys think?
I actually had the fight for Froch. I had it 114-113.
Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, my God.
Hey, you blinded in some of them judges out there, man.
No, and I actually thought that the ninth round was really close, and I gave that to Derrell. So I honestly can say I score fights pretty damn good, and I almost scored it the same as those two judges that scored at 115-112.
I couldn't split them in the first two rounds. I couldn't split them, and I think that's very. Have you seen the official scorecard?
No disrespect to Strike Arts, but. You also thought that Nate Campbell was going to take Bradley late, so.
Yeah, I would still say that. I would still say that. I mean, I don't always get the outcome right, but I'm pretty damn close on who's going to win a particular fight. I'm usually not wrong in that regard.
This is true.
My scorecards are pretty much on key, I would say. I mean, I'll say when it's a robbery. This was not a robbery. I could see a close fight for Derrell.
Well, can we call it a robbery when Derrell tried so hard to avoid fighting Froch? You know,
right.
All those times
he was running
voting,
the whole time.
Can we call it a robbery?
No. I mean, there was a lot of close rounds. You could call it one way or the other. But the fact of the matter is the guy coming forward was Froch. The guy avoiding fighting, which is what you're there to do in the first place, was Derrell.
And the guy who was eating the most leather, too, was Froch. He was coming forward eating the most leather.
I mean, for a guy who was running, he was busting Froch up a bit.
Only towards the end of the fight. You're remembering the 10th, 11th, and 12th rounds. I mean, there was a point in the third round where Froch had gotten Derrell pretty good, too.
The only thing is this. The only thing is I have a question for Strike Hard. Are you Gail Van Hoy undercover?
Hell no, and not even close. Gail Van Hoy is 10 rounds to 2 in a fight where it was just as close as this one. But I'm scoring at 1 point for a guy who, first of all, I mean, even if you think Derrell won this fight, the fact that he came and fought such a stupid fight in somebody's hometown is unbelievable. If I would have known that he was going to fight like such an idiot in there, I would have called it a decision for Froch. But having thought that he was going to go in there to actually fight, I figured he would get himself knocked out.
But I just got to ask you, that was a pretty small ring for
fight.
That was a pretty small ring for guys that size.
Round 11, Derrell, it was Derrell's best round of the fight, and I feel as if he should have a little bit more kind of confidence in himself, started kind of planting his punches a little bit, and stood kind of toe-to-toe at times. I get the impression at times that if Derrell did stand toe-to-toe, he would have got the better of Froch in the later rounds. What do you think? Did you score the rounds 11 and 12? Did you give them to Durrell?
I absolutely gave those rounds to Durrell. If he would have fought that way for the whole fight, I mean, he would have a lot more to say about getting robbed. But he didn't do that.
He was already ahead going into the 10th round, and this was his first time going into the championship rounds. He fought like a champion. He was backing up, but Froch was eating post leather in that fight. And I gave it to Durrell hands down. I think he won an easy decision. But I think Durrell, I think this ain't the end for him. I think he'll learn from this whole experience, and he'll be back.
Do you have any problems with because a lot of people are complaining about rabbit punching as well, and I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, you should rabbit punch a guy when he holds you all the time. But the fact of the matter is Durrell would hold any time they were close, regardless of whether or not it was a smart tactical move for him or not. He would just grab him if they were close. So first of all, the fact that the point was deducted, I have no problem with. But honestly, if he wouldn't have pulled that kind of crap, he wouldn't have been rabbit punched. That's as simple
but
as
I'm
it is.
But I'm sick and tired of hearing people say that just because a fighter is coming forward and that he should win the fight. That's like going back on that Oscar De La Hoya Trinidad fight. You know, that's some bull right there. That doesn't mean just because a fighter is coming forward doesn't mean he wins the fight. That's the most stupid thing I ever heard, if I ever heard anything.
You need to throw punches to win rounds, and Durrell was more concerned with running away than doing anything else.
But he was still up punching.
He was throwing punches, man. I don't know what fight you was watching. He was throwing punches.
We're going to have to sit down and watch this again together because, honestly, I feel like Durrell was doing everything he can to avoid fighting. He was hitting him with jabs, but he never really, until the 10th, 11th, and 12th round, let me qualify with that, he never really bothered Froch with a whole lot of anything other than making him miss punches.
The guy who's
being more aggressive, if the other guy's doing nothing, is going to win the round, even if he's doing it in a sloppy way, especially at home.
What you say there, see the first two rounds I couldn't split neither, man. I scored them even, but they know that judges are renowned. They don't like scoring even rounds. And in that case, they favour the champion. If there's no champion, they favour the aggressor. So that's where I feel the fight got lost there. Those early rounds where the judges couldn't split them.
Gave the first to Froch and the second to Durrell. So that's how I saw that.
Guys, I'm going to go to the switchboards real quick. I got a caller from the area code 915. I believe it's Ashy Knuckles. Ashy Knuckles, brother, how you doing?
All right, 915 is actually Dragon Style.
Absolutely, Dragon Style. Dragon Style, man, real quick, man, give us your take on Froch and Durrell. Who you think won it and why, man?
All right, I honestly, in my opinion, I have Froch winning the fight. I think Durrell, like Strikehart just said, I think he was avoiding fighting from round one. And once he really started to exchange punches with Froch, then he was hurting Froch. And it was clear he could have probably knocked out Froch. But, you know, from rounds 1 to 9, he was really avoiding fighting. He was ducking too low. He was giving his back. He was holding, constantly holding. And you really can't do that if you want to win a fight and take a championship.
Right.
But I don't really see what Froch was doing either. What was Froch doing? He was moving forward and getting eaten leather.
Only jabs for the first 9 rounds. It's not like
so what? Those count what? Jabs don't count as points no more?
Not
jabs don't count as points.
Shoulder.
I mean, just tell me, jabs don't count as points, man. He was eating leather.
No, you gotta rewatch those first 9 rounds because Durrell is a more athletic cat, and Froch looks sloppy. But I mean, you can't really split who's landing the more punches first of all, and who's landed the more effective punches. So what you're left doing is deciding on who's there to fight and who's not. and it's clear that Froch is the only guy in there that really wants to fight.
But we knew what Durrell came
in. I think that was the strategy, man. His strategy was stick and move. I don't know if y'all ever heard of stick and move, but ain't nothing wrong with stick and move. Just going back to the basics.
Though it's not stick and hug.
We knew what Durrell came in to do, and we knew what Froch came in to do. Froch was ineffective over what he was trying to do the whole fight. He landed his best shots on Durrell that had no effect, and when Durrell landed a shot on him, he got all, you know, soup legs on everybody. And, you know, luckily the round saved him, but Froch is ineffective that whole
I mean,
fight.
I give Froch some credit. He landed some good shots. he landed some good shots in Darrell's hands on his gloves. He landed some real good shots on his gloves with his hands.
He landed a good shot in the third round, man. Go back and watch it.
Yeah, I know. I saw that, but that wasn't enough to win the fight, though.
It's one round at a time.
Let's get another take on this. I got Knuckles on the line. Jay, you there,
brother?
Hello?
Ashley,
what's up, man? You on the line?
Oh, what's going on, man? Y'all can hear me?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, we got you.
Give us your thing real quick, man. Did Darrell box Crotch ass off, or did he hug? Which version do you go with?
Man, I'm not even on front, but I'm going to tell you, Darrell did land the cleaner and the harder punches, but he did more running and hugging and complaining than he did fighting. And that's what pissed me off. It's your first opportunity for a world title. You're a natural counterpuncher. You're naturally athletic. You're faster. You got faster hands. You got better movement. And once you see that the guy couldn't hit you, you know, it should have been easy pickings for him. I mean, the best opponent for a guy who can counterpunch is a guy who comes right at you. Well, that's exactly what Frosch did, and he didn't take full advantage of it. It's like he punches sometimes, and all the other times he chose to, you know, clinch the guy and run from him and complain. And, you know, I'm like, you can only do one job at a time, and that's fight. That's what you go to training camp for. That's what you pay your sparring partners for. That's what you have a corner for. You can't be the referee and the fighter. I mean, next thing you know, he's going to judge the fight, be his own sparring partner, and be his own opponent. You can only do one thing at a time, and what your job is to do in there is fight. Now, I do agree that the punches behind the head should have been taken in consideration, but it ain't the first time, you know, we've seen fouls in the ring. I mean, you basically have a beef with all Bernard Hopkins' career because, I mean, he fouled damn near everybody he fought. I mean, I can think back to when he fought Keith Holmes, and he got fouled. He fouled Keith Holmes in every round, and Steve Smoker ain't do nothing. You know, he probably warned him once or twice, didn't take a point or anything like that. You know,
well, the referee in this fight, he was complete garbage. He sucked. And yeah, I admit, Darrell did a whole bunch of complaining and stuff, but I still don't see what Fox did that made him win this fight.
Right. I mean, the major category that sweeps on, you know, when you judge fight is clean punching. I mean, there is four criteria that you consider when you're fighting, and you really don't know what the judges are looking at. If they scored on clean punching, then obviously Darrell won it, hands down. But
that's what I'm saying.
In favor, effective aggressiveness, they have to give it to Frosch because even though he wasn't landing the bigger shots, it's what he was doing that made Darrell complain, hold, and run. And that would come forward and put their heat on him. So if that's what they scored it for, then, you know, you got to give it to Frosch. But me, right. I scored it for Darrell, but I don't have a problem with the decision because I understand how they were scoring the fight in Frosch's favor, and that's because he actually looked like the champion there. Darrell didn't look like somebody who was actually wanting to take the title from him. He looked like somebody who was intimidated by his opponent and only threw punches when his ass was on the line. Excuse my language, you know what I'm saying? When he was on the verge of getting touched up some, you know? Instead of going
Absolutely.
In there and putting this guy down, you know what I'm saying? Because he has the ability to do that. I mean, the guy had...
Right. Frosch owned the middle of the ring for that pretty much that whole fight. So.
Darrell still has Olympic instincts. He still fights like he's in the Olympics, like he's
in
the amateurs.
Bad, though.
Darrell's also got that style where he's evasive. He works in his defense as well. You guys are going to appreciate the defensive game as well. We all wanted to see these two guys stand toe-to-toe. Frosch was prepared to do it. Darrell wasn't. But during that fight, Darrell absolutely outclassed Frosch and parts of it, and that's coming from somebody who wanted Frosch to win the fight.
I mean, my question with this is basically, yeah, you know, Darrell was landing some decent punches, but he would land, let's say, single digit numbers in some of those rounds, and he would hug Frosch maybe 3-4 times every time he landed one. So you know, is that not something that should be counted against him? Because if I was judging that fight, rather, if I was refereeing that fight, I would have taken a lot more points for holding. I would have taken points away from Frosch for hitting behind the head, too, after warning him. But, you know, to me, it felt like Andre Darrell was holding from the beginning to the end. You know, and that's
well,
a lot of holding.
And he was warned a lot. He was warned many times before that point was taken.
Well, then that's up to Frosch to take it in his hands and do something that does not want to make Darrell get close to him. Mm-hmm. Frosch is supposed to take this as a professional. He's supposed to be a man fighting a boy. And it looked like two men were fighting in that ring.
Mr. David Chen, though, who did you have to win the fight? Because I think you're the only guy that's held out on that info.
In terms of points, if I was a judge there, I would have given it to Andre Durrell.
Okay.
I would have been fair. I would have said, you know what? He landed more punches. He did better in more rounds. I would give it to him. But I have no problem with Carl Froch winning the fight. It's a split decision, obviously. And I'm definitely not going to call it a robbery. I don't like to use that word. I can say I don't disagree with the decision, but just because I don't agree with the decision does not make it a robbery. Because that word is reserved for people who actually deserve it. When, you know, some people actually have been robbed. Andre Durrell did not get robbed in this fight because he gave away half the fight. And that's something he's just going to have to live with and something he's going to kick himself over.
The funny thing is, too, is I essentially scored the fight a draw because I had to give, you know, a point or take away a point from Durrell, too. So I actually did score it pretty much 6 rounds apiece. So it's not like I'm crazy up in here. When I scored a round for Froch, it was more because of what Durrell didn't do than what Froch did. And that's just the bottom line. Durrell should really learn from this.
We still have a ride or die on the line?
Yes, you do. How you doing, brother?
The score cards, the whole fight, man. What do you think?
Well, it's funny, man. I caught a lot of heat, too. I spoke to Blood after the fight. I really thought, personally, that if you look at it from what you guys looking at, that Durrell, you know, he could have won. But honestly, I really don't have no problems with Froch winning the fight. And I'm going to tell you why. Number one is, you know, Froch was the aggressor. Number two is, I really felt like, although Durrell did well, Froch didn't really go in there and impose his will and take the belt from the champion, from his home soil, and make Froch like a, you know, a true loser. The third thing, too, I look at is that, you know, we've watched boxing so long. I mean, there have been so many other robberies that have been worse than this that, at the end of the day, this really only raised Durrell's stock. I mean, he has so much potential. And I bet you the next time he goes and he fights one of these champions, you know, with his 18 wins, he won't approach the fight, you know, that way. I bet you he'll be more aggressive, he'll engage more, and he won't be backpedaling as much. Or if he does backpedal, he'll swing punches. So, I mean, that's where I am. And at the end of the day, when you look at it, you know, I was telling Blood and I was telling 97, Durrell wasn't really complaining about it either then. I mean, you know, it wasn't like he was, you know, real animated like most people who felt like they've been robbed. So I really don't think we have a problem, and I think that, you know, his stock grew as a result of this, in my opinion.
Yeah, he did more complaining in the ring.
Exactly. So, and outside of it, he was a true gentleman. He basically articulated himself very well, saying, hey, you know what, it's a learning experience. It wasn't like he was all frustrated and everything like that, and, you know, I think it did wonders for him, man. And, you know, I think his stock raised. You know, we found more about Durrell. We found out he had the physical tools. You know, just a couple of things that got tightened up, you know, interpersonally, and he'll be fine. So that's right. And now the other thing is that Froch, in my opinion, although he won and I picked him to win, in terms of skill, he actually went down a notch, you know, in my opinion. I'm just going to be honest with you. Just going to be honest with you. Like, I don't have him – I am struggling, man. I'm just going to be honest with you. He's good, you know, but I have him struggling. I really do, you know. So
he isn't going to be able to handle Kessler, Ward, or Abraham, I don't think. I think I'm keeping him in my bottom three now.
Isn't Durrell going to face some Abraham next, though?
Durrell is going to face Abraham next. And I'm going to tell you this, too. We talked about it. I mean, what can you say? Golly, I can see why Pavlik and even Jermaine Taylor avoided him at middleweight. I mean, that guy is something to be reckoned with, man. I mean, we laugh at his little winky right type style with power, but that guy knows what he's doing in there, man. And I just hope, man, that Durrell don't play himself, man, in that fight, because he can get hurt too, man. I mean, everybody forgets Anthony Henshaw knocked Durrell down legitimately. They didn't call it a knockdown. Imagine if Arthur Abraham hit him with one of them straight right hands.
Yeah, not only that, but Arthur Abraham could take one hell of a punch, too. So he could take risks because he has one hell of a chin. He fought a whole fight with a broken jaw.
Yeah, and now he has, like, some titanium. He has some titanium or some shit in his jaw.
All right, guys, let's hold off for this right now because, you know, we're going to go back to this tomorrow and in the upcoming weeks, I'm sure. Right now, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to do some MMA coverage with Chris Herrera, all right? So, guys, we'll be back in a few minutes. Once again, on the 28th of November in Coachella, California, at the Spotlight 29 Casino, Champion Promotions will be hosting an event called Clash of the Gladiators featuring some of the local professional fighters. More information will be available on the website in future weeks. Now, Chris, our resident MMA expert and the friend of our show, Rob Riddler from Puerto Rico, guys, take it away. Let us, you know, fill us in on the MMA news going on right now.
All right, first off, I got to say I love the break, you know, leading into my segment with the West Coast Classic. You're taking me back to high school with that one. So whoever chose that song, good choice. You know what's up. Anyways, all right, real quick on the news tip. UFC's playing their little game they like to play. Their counter-programming Strikeforce, who's having their network television debut on November 7th. UFC does this thing where they like to show some of their fights at the same exact time. So they're trying to draw viewers away. Basically, they're cock-blocking Strikeforce. They've done it in the past with success, you know, to other companies. I don't know. I guess if you got a stranglehold on the, you know, on the business, you should put your foot down on the other guy's neck, but I don't really like it.
Wait, Chris, hold on. Didn't they try to do this with the Mayweather-Marquez pay-per-view, and they just keep trying it?
Yeah, they did it there, but that's a different. You're going after a boxing audience there. This is with the MMA audience. You know, they have no control over boxing fans, but when it comes to MMA fans, you know, they definitely got the stronghold on the sport. So they're just wrapping their hand around the little guy's throat before he even gets a chance, you know, to get out there. And they've done it successfully. They already put two companies out of business the last 2 years and tried to, you know, go against them. So
now,
I don't
my
like
question, real quick, Chris, is are the MMA fans aware of this? You know, are they okay with this? Is it just one of those like, well, what can we do? You know, the UFC is the big boy, and we want to see these fights.
I think the hardcore fans like myself have problems with it, but unfortunately, there seems to be more like casual fans that are into the sport. So they just see UFC and they don't even pay no mind to these other organizations. So they're just like, oh, UFC's on. We got to watch that, even if it's a repeat. So that's why the UFC does it. You know, they know what works. But anyways, aside from that, the other news story of the week, this other little company coming up called Bellator, they were on ESPN Deportes last year. They got a network deal with Fox Sports Net. They're also going to be on NBC Late Night on the weekends and Telemundo. So, you know, be able to grab three different networks to air your fights on, I think that's a pretty good pretty good deal for them, you know. And, you know, we know boxing was on Telemundo up until recently, you know, so, you know, I guess MMA's kind of getting its shot to, you know, take the place where boxing's unfortunately not able to capitalize on. And the big thing of the weekend, though, UFC 104 going down a Saturday night. You got the main event, Lyoto Machida against the challenger, Mauricio Shogunua. I don't know what Rob thinks about this fight personally, but it, like, just to relate it in boxing terms, you know, just for the boxing fans out there, in my opinion, this is kind of like Lyoto being the champion. He reminds me of the Floyd Mayweather, whereas Shogun would be seen as Shane Mosley, like the guy that was on top, you know, had a little bit of a down spell, and now he's going up against the guy that's perceived as like the undefeated cat, the guy that's, you know, untouchable almost. Not to say Mayweather's untouchable, but this guy, Machida, he's like Mayweather. I mean, guys can't put hands on him. He's undefeated, and, you know, he's the champ for a reason. I don't know. What do you think about that, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you, but I think he's like what Mayweather would be if Mayweather was exciting. But, you know, I guess, yeah, but my only thing about the fight is Mauricio hasn't looked as good as he has since his Pride days. And I think one of his best fights was against Nogueira, or one of my favorite fights. And I don't know, like, he looked really vulnerable in that fight, and he hasn't looked that good since. So I guess he's on sort of a decline, and I'm not sure how prepared he will be against Machida, because he really can't. I don't think anybody can really base a prediction off of Mauricio's last two fights. So, I mean, it is what it is, but I don't think he'll get knocked out. I think he's just skilled enough and beyond smart enough to go the distance.
Yeah, the only thing intriguing about this fight to me for the most part, is unlike all Machida's other opponents, they were all one-dimensional guys, Ortiz, Evans, Thiago Silva. Mauricio Shogun, he kicks. You know, Machida uses a lot of those kicks. He's got that karate and whatnot. Mauricio Shogun, he can mix it up with the hands. He's got the black belt jiu-jitsu. He can throw kicks, so, you know, he's got a multi-dimensional game and tool set, just like Machida, even if they don't have the same styles. So I think, you know, he could threaten Machida in that way, if nothing else. But until I see someone beat a certain guy, it's hard to imagine them losing. And Machida, I mean, I know boxing fans, you know, like myself, aren't really fans of Vitaly Klitschko's fights or Mayweather's, but Machida's probably the closest thing. I mean, this guy's never lost a round in the UFC. This guy doesn't even get hit. I mean, the guy's untouchable. It's unbelievable how someone could be in 25-minute or 15-minute fights and not even get hit clean once.
Is this it for Machida? Because I think Shogun's probably the only threat in UFC terms right now that I can only see would give him really, really bad trouble, if he gives him any trouble at all.
Yeah, if he gets past him, it's smooth sailing for a while. Real quick, I just want to talk about the one undercard bout heavyweight fight. Ben Rothwell against Cain Velasquez. You got the young up-and-comer against the guy that's the veteran, the guy with the big punch. I believe you took Ben Rothwell. I got Velasquez. I just want to know why you think Ben Rothwell is going to win this fight.
Because, like, every time I see a picture of him, I see him fight, he always looks like somebody stole his cookie or some shit. He's pissed all the time. No, I'm joking. But, no, I don't know. I didn't really like how Cain looked in that damn Chuck Congo fight. I didn't really look and I was laughing because it's like, how can you get taken down by a dude that's half knocked out? Like I don't know how Cain Velasquez managed to take him down. So I think it's going to start off, every fight starts off as on the feet, as Joe Rogan would say, you know. But like I said, I think he has the advantage on the feet. I don't like how Cain Velasquez comes in with his hands. I think he's vulnerable. And I think if Rothwell hurts him, he can take him out.
Yeah, well, I think the Chikongo fight was a learning experience. You know, all young fighters got to go through it. We talked about it earlier in the night about, like, you know, with Darrell Frotch, sometimes these fighters got to go through the tough fight so they can learn from it. I think Velasquez learned from it. Going to put Rothwell on his ass and just ride out a decision. he's rocking a brown pride tattoo on his chest, man. How can I not root for the guy? So that's my thoughts on it. Yo, David, if Dragon Style is still on the line, you know, you could kind of ask him real quick what he thinks, because I know he made a video about it, but if not, you know, that's pretty much all we got to talk about for the time.
Dragon Style, is he on the line, brother?
Yeah. I think I'll just make it brief, but I got Machida. He's going to TKO Shogun by the second round. Shogun, recently, I honestly believe he was on polysteroids and Pride, like I think a lot of Pride fighters were. he's going to probably gas out by the second round, third round. I don't think he's even going to touch Machida unless you get him on the clinch, of course, because Machida's pretty good in Muay Thai. But if you can't get him in the clinch, it's going to be over real quick. And, you know, I just see a complete domination by Machida.
Well, guys, here's my question. You know, a lot of boxing fans, they're just normal fight fans. They're the crossover fans. They might want to check out this UFC card. But a lot of boxing fans, you know, they're not into the jiu-jitsu part of the MMA. They think it's boring. They don't like the ground game. So tell us about the styles of the main event, you know, about Shogun and Machida. Is there things in there that aesthetically would be pleasing to the boxing fans? Is this something that a boxing fan should check out?
Unfortunately, this isn't the card I would suggest to boxing fans that are even thinking of getting an MMA. These guys in the main event, they're more, especially Machida, he's a pure martial artist. The guy's got a karate background. I mean, he's straight out the Karate Kid, no lie. And his fight style, like I said, it's like Floyd Mayweather. If you enjoy a guy like Mayweather who's technically precise and just can pick his opponents apart like a damn surgeon in there, then you might like it. But style-wise, I mean, Machida brings it. He's got that Muay Thai style. You know, he's not really trying to get the jiu-jitsu, but I just think style-wise, this is going to be much more of a technical fight from more of a pure standpoint. And I really don't think even someone like Blood, who I know has watched MMA, watched UFC a little bit here and there in the past, I don't think he would really have any interest in this fight. You know, I think if he saw this, he'd be like, he'd probably call me up and be like, damn, Chris, why are you telling me to watch that shit?
Blood, you been watching MMA?
Oh, man, I love MMA. I don't know as much about it, nowhere near as much as these guys, but I've been watching it a lot more lately. I'm not even going to lie.
Who you like, though?
Oh, man. You know what? I've been watching MMA ever since the first UFC when they had, like, Horace Gracie and Shamrock and Severin and, you know, so I've been watching it for a long time, man, you know, but I just never really, really got into it like boxing. But I've been watching it for quite a minute, man. You know, I always watch all the UFC, the little things they put on Spike TV, the Ultimate Fighters. I like watching those, too. You know.
Go ahead, let's finish it. Now I want to ask you a question real quick.
Oh, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
I'm just curious, man, because, you know, there's a lot more successful black fighters nowadays. You know, Rampage, Rashad. I know Anderson Silva isn't black, but some people might.
Silva, boy.
I'm curious, you know. The sport, I noticed when I watch it, there's a lot more, you know, urban market in the fans and stuff. You know, you know, I always hear you talking about, you know, you still represent the hood and whatnot. Do you think it's a sport that's catching on more with, you know, like African-American community and whatnot? What do you think?
I think so, because I think a lot of the network TV coverage, man. You know, we get to see it on Spike TV. A lot of people watch or starting to watch those fights, especially with guys like Rashad Evans coming in there and Rampage, and you know, these guys are helping promote the sport for black people. And you know, hey man, it's up and coming for everybody, man, and more black people are getting involved in it now too,
right.
So you know, I think it's definitely a growing sport, and I do watch it a lot more often nowadays than what I used to, but I've always watched it here and there though.
While I'm on the topic, you know, also Rob and David Chen, you know, you guys got different perspectives, you know. David, you know, you're Asian, and Rob, you're from Puerto Rico, you know. Is the sport growing more, you know, in those cultures as well, or, you know, do you think so?
Go ahead, Rob.
Well, yeah, actually, because it was, I think Puerto Rico just held its first MMA event recently, actually. I'm not sure how really good, I didn't really look into how good it did, but, yeah, you know, I see a lot of martial art gyms opening up. There's actually it's jiu-jitsu is getting really big here for some reason. A lot of people are liking jiu-jitsu here. So I don't really understand that. I thought, you know, being as people be on their Bacardi over here, that they would like to stand up a lot more and get into Muay Thai or something. But they're loving jiu-jitsu. So, yeah, it's catching on pretty quick over here.
I mean, coming from my perspective, I'm Chinese, so I can really only tell you about China, but I'm pretty familiar about the fight scene over in Japan, and in Japan, they love everything. They got K-1 over there. They have, you know, a lot of the MMA fighters are from Japan, and obviously boxers, too. And in South Korea, boxing is huge, and boxing is really taken off in China. You know, in the 2008 Olympics, there were a lot of medal winners from China, and they're really thinking about bringing some of these guys into the professional scene. So I can tell you that Asian people really like the fight, that the, you know, that the fight scene, it's just the UFC itself right now is, you know, is the main company in MMA, and that is a predominantly American, like, product, and it's really rare to hear about that in Asia, you know. Like, I can ask somebody, the UFC, they really don't know what that is. You see what I mean? And that's really the only thing. I mean, they have no reason to change that. I mean, they should appeal to the American audience. That's where they're getting their butter from. But at the moment, obviously, you know, Asian people, they love fights. They love martial arts, things like that. They just aren't really particularly into the sport of MMA right now as it's dominated by the UFC. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I gotcha.
And also, you know, we're on here talking about UFC and MMA, you know, and I'm sure a lot of boxing fans out there are like, oh, man, and, you know, MMA, ah. But honestly, you know, fighters are fighters, you know. A guy who works hard to train hard to fight another man with skill, you know, is respectable. And as a fight fan, you know, it should aspire to the same, you know, the same feeling you have about boxers. So, you know, that's why we talk about it, because honestly, to me, there's no difference. I came from martial arts. You know, I've done martial arts for many, many years. You know, I've done boxing too, you know, just the stuff that I love. So, you know, all this bickering about aesthetic, you know, aesthetics aside, you know, fighters are fighters. Am I right, Chris?
Absolutely. You know, I've talked about it online, on YouTube and whatnot before. Even if I'm not a fan of a fighter, or I know there's, you know, boxing and MMA fans have a lot of little disputes here and there, any man that, you know, goes through the training and steps in the cage or the ring, regardless of the sport, and puts his life on the line, I think you should show that person respect. You know, I don't think that, you know, unless you, I always say this, I have a kind of a theory personally, you know, I would never say anything about a man, a fighter, I don't care who it is, that I wouldn't have the balls to say to his face. So, you know, that's just my take on it.
I mean, I know what you mean, because I talk to my friends all the time. I say, well, Joe Caldaggy, I don't really like his style because he slaps a lot, but I really don't want him to, like, do that to me. You see what I mean? I'm sure it actually hurts more than it looks. But one thing I actually wanted to bring up, and this is kind of funny to me, I don't know if it is for you guys, but a fight coming up overseas, a mega fight in the country of Poland, cruiserweight champion Tomasz Adamek has dug Andrew Galata out of somewhere. I mean, you know, when I heard the name, you know, that was a name that I hear in boxing documentaries. You see what I mean? So I was like, who?
Right.
Did you get the same feelings, Rikard Blood?
Well, I'll just give you my quick take on this, because I come from an area of New Jersey where you can't, I mean, well, actually, I should say I don't, but I grew up pretty close to where my father grew up, who is Polish, and his whole family is Polish, and there's a lot of areas in Jersey where there's lots of Polish people. All that aside, I know for a fact this is a huge, huge fight in Poland. I mean, even my grandmother knows about this, and she doesn't know nothing about boxing. So it's basically just Polish people getting excited about two Polish guys that are about to fight. It's really no more complicated than that. I'm sure it's going to make buku money over there. And you heard Glenn Johnson saying Tomasz Adamek couldn't make the money he wanted, so he found a way to make it, apparently.
Well, what did you think when you heard the name?
Oh, man. We talked about this a little bit before. You know, it's a big fight over there. Andrew Galata is just so past his prime at this point, man. Don't get me wrong. I mean, in his heyday, man, this fight would have been a joke. But at this point, you know,
it's just a big
fight for over there, man. That's just the way I'm looking at it. It's not a fight that I'm really that interested in, honestly.
I mean, you said in the heyday it would have been a joke for who? Because Galata, when he was in his prime,
in his prime, this guy wouldn't have stood a chance against Galata. You know, the Galata that beat Riddick Bowe two times.
Oh,
well, he didn't get the win, but back in that day, even though he was cheating and doing all kind of crazy stuff. He was a way better fighter back then, though,
yeah,
man.
Galata is unstable. I mean, he's a pretty crazy guy. So I am a little bit scared for Adamek's future, because you never know what that guy's going to do in the ring.
He ain't did nothing crazy in a little minute now. He's fought more level-headed, but he's not the beast he once was, though.
I got Galata.
He's one of the few people that have actually just walked out of the ring in the middle of the fight, said, oh, never mind, I'm going home. See you guys later. I mean, that's the kind of crazy stuff you might expect in this fight. That guy's insane.
Yeah, and then he could quit just like he did with Mike Tyson.
Yeah, that's a fight that should have happened, man. Mike Tyson Golada would have been something funny would have happened in that fight for sure.
It did happen.
Yeah, it did happen. That's what I'm saying. You don't remember what happened when Golada quit, what Golada's referee called him in?
Wait, was that the fight that he quit in?
Yeah, he quit.
I completely blocked out that was the fight that he quit in. That makes perfect sense now.
They should have had a rematch, man.
For
you know
sure.
It's bad when you make Mike Tyson look like the sane one in the fight.
Exactly,
yeah.
Wow, that's craziness. I completely forgot. I remembered that he walked out. I didn't remember who the hell it was.
I remember he got hit in the head by some punch drink because it looked like someone threw a drink and it looked like his head was bleeding, but it was a drink. Real quick on the fight, though, the one positive out of this is Adamek finally had to, you know, relinquish the IBF title that he is freaking holding hostage and wouldn't give Steve Cunningham his damn rematch, which I've been waiting to see. So at least Cunningham's going to get a shot at that title, even though it's going to be against Matt Godfrey. God, I want that fight. But,
yeah, Adamek is actually saying that he might just stay at heavyweight, which is a little bit funny to me because he was light heavyweight just a minute ago.
Terrible.
I mean,
idea.
He just moved up to cruiserweight. What is he thinking about?
I don't know. Yo, I want to hear what Rob's got to say, though. I heard him in the background there say he's got Golada winning this fight. What's up with that, Loco?
Golada is going to beat the shit out of this dude. I don't care. Golada could be wrapped up in mummy papers. He still beat Andrew. What's this dude's Adamek's ass? I don't get it. Adamek just comes forward taking punches. You can't do that against a real heavyweight. This dude's going to hit Andrew Adamek once. He's going to have him do him the crip walk. And then it's going to be over. That's it. I don't care how washed up he is. If he loses, I don't know what I'll do. I'll do some Fear Factor shit if he loses. I'll eat a rotten sandwich. I will eat a rotten sandwich.
Can we get a bet? Can we get a bet on the air right now?
I don't even want to bet on this fight.
I'm gonna do this myself. Nobody else has to participate in this.
Rizzler just wants to eat the rotten sandwich, y'all. He does something he want to do any damn way.
I'll drink rotten milk. I don't care anything.
All right, let's hold him to it. Let's hold him to that one.
This is how confident.
The only prediction I have is that the crowd is going to be insane. Like, you guys are going to be saying, what the hell are these people so excited about with this fight right here? But I'm telling you, they're going to be really excited. It's going to be craziness.
If my grandma knows about it, that's it.
I forgot about Mike Tyson, who's one of my favorite fighters. Yeah, good craziness, isn't it? It's almost better for me that I forgot about that because that fight was such an embarrassing moment.
There wasn't much to remember.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? The only thing that I remember about that fight is Golada walked out of the ring. When I was talking about it, I didn't even see an opponent in my mind. I saw Golada stepping through the ropes and walking away in the middle of the fight.
I remember what his referee called him after the fight. I remember that part, too.
Come on, Golada. Because I don't want to drink that milk now. Damn, I just realized I said I'm going to drink rotten milk. Oh, shit.
No.
Yeah, we'll be waiting. That'd be another classic vid.
Rob. you gotta do something obvious.
All right, I don't know what I'll do, but we got a long time for this show.
We'll figure out on tomorrow night's show. Speaking of which, it's about that time of night. Any last thoughts, guys?
Yeah, I got one quick last thought. Since we're talking about visuals and memories and all that and my forgetting of Mike Tyson, when Glenn Johnson was talking about his Italian driver crying for him in the fight, for some reason the guy that I imagined in my mind was Roberto Benigni, and I had to do everything in my power to stop from laughing because I don't know if you guys know who that is, but that guy's hilarious. That guy is hilarious, and I couldn't not get him. I couldn't get out of my head, and I almost cracked up interviewing Glenn Johnson, thinking about Roberto Benigni. So last thought. Talk to y'all guys tomorrow.
Yeah, man. Y'all boys be easy.
Yep. We got to give a shout-out to Arturo over at standandfight.com. Art, we love you. You do a lot of good work for us. Shout-out to Red. Happy birthday, man. You do a lot of good work.
Happy birthday, Red.
Happy birthday.
Stand and fight in the house.
All right, fellas. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow on tomorrow night's show. Everybody else, tune in next time.
Even in the ring.
Radio.
Go ahead, who's this?
Yo, David Chang.
Is it me, man, or is Marquez just a goddamn beast?
Every time Marquez moves up in weight, moves to a different division, he's fighting the toughest competition he can find there. You know, he's not just finding a name that's stylistically good for him. He's fighting the hardest fight he could fight and then winning.
See, if anything's killing boxing, it's boxing. Not UFC.
You know, I won't bash MMA and I won't say, you know, it's killing boxing or boxing is better. You know, everybody has their own opinion.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Shane Mosley versus Margarito sold out the Staples Center, and that was the largest attendance for any event. Everything, every concert, anything. That was the most. And that was just recently. So that's really where boxing is headed, along with the Ricky Hatton, Manny Pacquiao. Selling out.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Okay, but everybody right now, if you're calling in, I got a couple more calls calling in. I'm not going to pass you through at the moment, but there is a chat room. If you look on, there's a chat room. You can start chopping it up or ask your questions, and I will pass you in through as soon as we can.